Welcome again, Team Energy. I can see the Department of Full Force and the rest. ESCOM wouldn't want to join us yesterday. And Petro SA. I remember today we are looking at the government's report of the second quarter, which I trust and hope in future will try and be innovative enough to ensure that we get it as fast as possible, because this gap between these quarters, we're in the third quarter, né? And we're handling the second quarter, whereas if at least we would have been handling this report, Babungoni, at least in the middle of this third, no. It's the second quarter. If we could handle it a little bit earlier. Or the quarter ending September and it's October. Oh, we've improved. Apologies. I don't know, I still have that mind that there's still a quarter gap in between. No, we've improved. Thanks for that. But we still could improve a bit faster and faster, because the medium-term budget policies strategy, although it was presented last week, but the National Treasury had compiled it, as I can see, I think up to 30th of September. So it's possible these things can happen. Once again, just as a refresher, the paradigm shift is away from just presenting finances, facts and figures, how much money has been spent. It's a very strong link between the finances and the operations, which I think, honourable members, if you noticed in the budget review process, in future, those quarterly reports will have a very strong effect when we check the rate of performance of the department, even if we do it at the end of each year. But as to how we're monitoring the rate, whether it's electrification or inspections of licenses in the retail sector, whether it's public participation engagements, whether it's renewable energy, and all the likes, whether it's energy efficiency in future, how it is improving, you know, on a quarterly basis. I trust and hope this will be a good instrument. And we've got, I don't see our researcher, but the content advisors around. I trust and hope they will also help us to do the monitoring in future as to, on a quarterly basis, how are we doing, because that's also very, very important to check. We do a couple of additional points to address, because we felt over and above the conventional information that the department will bring, we should have, so all of the members just have a couple of things to look into, backlog on legislation, focus on disabled people, progress on the non-grid electrification, and so forth. And I trust and hope the department will take us through on that, just to ensure that some of the areas which we were rather querying in the past or not clear on, we see how far are they. Before we hand over to the Department of Energy, shall we get attendance?
Thank you, Chair. The following apologies. Honourable Salau is attending the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. We're dealing with legislation. Honourable Ferguson is attending the Portfolio Committee on Water and Environmental Affairs, also processing legislation. And then Honourable Hadebe, who indicated this morning that he missed the morning flight from Nelspruit. And then also apologies from the Minister and the Deputy Minister, who's currently abroad here. And then also the DG, who's unable to make the meeting here. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Babamunguni and your team.
Thank you very much, Chair, for allowing us the opportunity to present the second quarter performance report of the Department of Energy. most indicated, but Chairperson, this is a very busy time for the department. As you can see, a number of key persons are not here. We are operating with very skeleton staff.
Just take note of what Minister Pavin Gordhan said a couple of days ago. Honourable Failing, please don't smile too much. These guys now are going to be off the hook, you know. So in future, they even come with a smaller team.
Yes. Actually, yesterday we met with the minister in the beginning. Yeah, then he was saying, no, come December, this will not be opening. So, Chairperson, the Secretariat has rendered apologies for the minister, who is currently in the DRC, Mr. Ombiapani, the Deputy Director General for Energy Policy and Planning. The Deputy Minister is in China with the Director General, Ms. Nelisi Magubane. Ms. Zungu is also commuted at home in the department, and yesterday attended the Pan-African Parliament session where she was also making a presentation. As you know, she's still recovering, so she will have to take it easy. So she is represented by Mr. Mdawidi, who is the Chief Director for Strategy and Risk Management. But before I proceed, I would really like to allow the members of my team to introduce themselves so that we can put the names to the different faces. Mr. Mbamo.
Daniel, Director General, Honorable Members, and Chairperson, my name is Zonel Mbambo. I'm the DDG for Nuclear.
Thanks, Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Josh Mgoni. I'm Deputy Director General of Corporate Services, but currently Acting Director General of the Department of Energy. Thanks.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. Tidiso Markubela is my name. I'm the DDG responsible for petroleum regulation.
Morning, Chair. My name is Lucy Bonat, DDG for Programs and Projects.
Good morning. My name is Chidizira Moizizi, Chief Director of Energy Planning.
Good morning, Chairperson. Honorable members of the committee. My name is Justin Daniel. I'm the Chief Director of Finance and Supply Chain Management. Currently, I'm acting Chief Financial Officer as Ms. Chetty is currently on study leave.
Good morning. I'm Steven van der Hoel, Financial Planning and Management Accounting at DOE.
Financial Planning and Badangi.
Morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Alda Chalala, Internal Audit Director.
So, Cecil, they're going to become a frequenter now. Welcome aboard.
Morning, Chair and Members. I'm Lucas Mulaudi, Chief Director, Strategy and Risk Management, standing in for Ms. Zungu.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and all members. My name is Jabulani Dlovu. I'm the Director of Petroleum Policy, representing Ms. Mkhize, who is the Chief Director.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Ntokozo Simpofu. From the Chief Directorate of Electricity, I will be asking with energy matters.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. And Honorable Members, I'm Noma Otubasa from the Department of Energy, responsible for renewable energy initiatives.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members and colleagues. I'm Dagran Rambao. I'm the Deputy Director under the Designated National Authority. I'll be acting on climate change and green development mechanism. Thanks.
Designated
National Authority.
What's that?
It's representing ODI for South Africa on clean development mechanism issues.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. I'm Joelle Mabusela, Director of Energy Efficiency, but currently acting as the Chief Director of Clean Energy, representing Ms. Motisa, who is in China with the Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity from our side. Those are introductions. Behind myself is Ms. Rita von Brandsburg, who is the executive assistant from our office, and Ms. Mplantandalele from the Director General's office. They will be taking or managing all the deliberations here so that when we arrive home, we can give our attention to whatever. Chairperson, our approach as proposed today, we'll deal with the presentations at the branch, and then thereafter we'll respond to the questions that were sent through to us on Friday evening. Then we'll talk those questions by way of giving feedback as to really what has happened in as far as our last session with the PCE is concerned. That's a way of introduction, Chairperson. Remember that in April this year, the department presented its 2013 annual performance plan to its committee based on the strategic session that was held in November 2012. The presentation indicated to our parents. May I request also just may request that because the memory sticks, so that we have an electronic version of yes. Okay. Right. Chairperson, I'm sorry about that. The presentation indicated that our plans going forward were, aligned to the government priorities, the National Development Plan, and then outcomes and the budget, as well as our role in strategic integrated projects, that is SIPs, of the PICC. The department took cognizance of the fact that the 2013 financial year is the last year of the current government term of office. The key focus areas have been identified for the 2013 financial year. Our key focus areas for 2013 is the implementation of the IRP, that is the Integrated Resource Plan, that includes nuclear independent power producers, etc., to increase the number of grid and non-grid connections through the Integrated National Electrification Program, the solar water heaters program, energy efficiency, the finalization of the restructuring of the self-group of companies, the finalization of the integrated energy plan, monitoring of the petroleum compliance issues, and the conclusion of the regulatory account process. So today's presentation is on progress made during the second quarter of 2013, and the branch heads at present here will focus on their presentations on the partial achieved and the not achieved targets, and the acting CFO, Mr. Justin Daniel, will give details of the department's financial performance. I will now allow Mr. Mbombo to proceed with the presentation on his area of performance, that is nuclear energy. Mr. Mbombo.
Thank you, Acting Director General, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Committee members and colleagues. I'm going to focus, as the Director General has indicated, on the targets that we've partially achieved and those that we have not achieved, and indicate what are the challenges and the solutions. Next slide. With regard to this issue, we've got one of the targets, that's the installation of the radiation portal monitors at a strategic port. What we're supposed to have achieved in this reporting period is that we should have imported these equipment from the IEA. We have not achieved this target. The project is delayed. The reason is that this is a multi-stakeholder project that we need to work with other stakeholders to get their inputs and also their buy-in in terms of us proceeding with this project. And so what we've done is we've convened a stakeholder engagement meeting where a project team was established that is now busy working on the details of putting the project back on track in terms of scoping the project and also making sure that the necessary stakeholders support the project. Next slide.
Just on that, sorry. Let me welcome Honorable Member Dumela Ndadiriau, Siyamukela Team Energy. I already was informed by the committee secretary that you are replacing Honorable Lucas, if I'm correct.
That is true, and thank you for saying welcome.
Yeah. Bienvenue. Okay, over.
Next slide. Okay, this is a matter that our target related to the processing of the applications for nuclear material and related equipment, which we had a turnaround time to process them within 8 weeks. We've partially achieved this target, Chairperson. We've processed within the prescribed time 16 of the 19.
Hang on. I'm a bit lost. Can you move to the previous slide? Did you make mention of the first one, the NRWI, the WTI?
Okay, sorry. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. This is the target we've got for the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute. The main thrust for this target is that we want to operationalize this institute because it's going to be responsible for doing research and management of radioactive waste disposal sites. The work that we're currently doing for this particular reporting time is that we should secure the office space for the institute. We've partially achieved the target. There is ongoing work that is happening is that we have set up a technical team that is busy developing strategies to address the transitional arrangement for the staff that will move from Nexa to the institute. I must also indicate, Chairperson, that part of the work that this task team is doing is to ensure that we open up a bank account for the institute so that when it starts to operate, there's ready funds that have been secured, the seed capital that we need to transfer in there. And I need also to highlight, Chairperson, to say there is a CAP memo that will be sitting in Cabinet tomorrow, which will seek to appoint the board of directors for this institute. So there is a good progress made in this regard. I had already covered the matter of radiation portal monitors. I dealt with the matter of the authorizations that we've processed, 16 of the 19 that we received within the turnaround time. The challenges we encountered there is that there's delays in terms of interacting with the applicants, requesting information, and therefore and this end up with us not meeting the 8-week turnaround time. The next target relates to the conducting of the nuclear audit. We're supposed to have initiated the audit in this reporting period. We have not achieved this target, Chairperson and honorable members, but this work that is currently ongoing. We've consulted our internal audit directorate with a view to learn from them how to conduct the audit, because this we will be doing for the first time, and we've also consulted other stakeholders, which is the National Nuclear Regulator. And what we then decided is that this target will then be initiated in the third quarter because this is an annual target. And that's, in this slide, this one relates to the NNR Amendment Act. In this reporting period, Chairperson, we need to have addressed the public comments. This target has been achieved.
I'm looking at slide 10.
Yes.
Slide 10.
Yes, that's slide 10. Public consultation
okay.
Was completed, and what we yes, what we are indicating is that this target has not been met. We wrote a letter to inform the cabinet that it's delayed because what we had, we went through with the process, we presented the amendment bill to the FOSAD cluster, which is the cluster for Director General, and we received comments. Among the comments was that we needed to consult the stakeholders that that will be impacted by the amendment. And so we are in the process of consulting the stakeholders. We, in fact, we have consulted most of the stakeholders except the Department of Defense. I must admit that's an error here. That says exception of DOD. It should be DOD Navy, because this is a matter that also will impact them in terms of the amendment. And so we've already provided them with the amendment, and we're continuing with the process of consulting them to finalize on matters that will impact their operations and the NNR's operations around the amendment. Slide. This slide, they deal with the matter of the Nuclear Energy Act amendment. During this reporting time, the draft amendment is supposed to have been submitted to the legal advisor or the chief state law advisor. We have not yet achieved the target because we are in a process of addressing the comments that we have now received from stakeholders. One of the stakeholders is still upset in terms of providing us comments, and that's a stakeholder that I've also highlighted that relate to the Department of Defense. We will be holding meetings with them in terms of them assisting us to providing us comments with regards to the two legislations we've indicated.
Just on that, the public consultation in slide 10, which process are you referring to there in slide 10?
In slide 10, I need to indicate, Chairperson, this relates to the NNR Amendment Act. So what we intended to have achieved during this time was that
NNR.
Yes.
And then in slide 11.
In slide 11, it's the Nuclear Energy Act.
Okay, sure. Fine.
Okay. So we highlighted that we are addressing the stakeholder comments, and we're also consulting the other stakeholders that are still outstanding. And then the next legislation is the fund bill on the draft fund bill on radioactive waste management. The target for this period is we're supposed to have consulted with the chief state law advisor. This target has not yet been achieved, Chairperson and honorable members, because we have consulted one of the stakeholders, which is the National Treasury, for concurrence with regards to how the draft bill will operate. I must indicate that this bill seeks to provide the mechanisms for making sure that these funds that will be coming from the waste generators is a draft bill, is a draft fund bill for radioactive waste management. Next slide. This is a matter on this slide. This is a matter that relates to the state system of accounting and control of nuclear material. What we're supposed to have achieved during this reporting period is that we should have sourced funding and the ministerial delegation providers to the host. The chairperson would recall this is a matter where the favor function is located within the operator, and what we seek to achieve with this target is that we want to remove the favor function from the operator and locate it at an appropriate institution. And so what has happened is that we have got an approval internally to remove the function and located within the Department of Energy whilst, as an interim measure, whilst we're still investigating the appropriate location of this function. What's happened is that the world meeting that was taking place and a task team was set up to deal with the logistics of how this function will be moved back to the department and also finding out what will be the implication. The next slide. The next target relates to the community outreach. We're supposed to have conducted two community outreach events during this reporting time. We've achieved, we've partially achieved this target. We had one outreach engagement where the minister held interaction with the youth in the Cape Town area in June. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mamo. We will now request Mr. Mukwege to proceed.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, honorable members, once again, good morning. I will be presenting on the petroleum regulation issues. I just want to perhaps start by indicating here that the quarter that just ended was a very tough one for the sector, for the petroleum sector. I guess operationally one would say it was not, but on a personal basis, so, you know, if you look at the human impact, there was an unfortunate incident of the loss of one of the leaders in this sector, the CEO of BP Southern Africa, who died suddenly. And I thought, Chairperson, it would be important that I just highlight the committee why I have to start with this loss. This the CEO of BP came to South Africa about 2 years ago, and in that 2 years, I will say that he contributed as a person immensely to this sector. And as we speak, Chairperson and members, there is 100 million rand that is committed by BP Southern Africa until 2018 for the development of skills in our country. And this is something that Mr. Gerard Debussy championed. And in fact, I need to say that the last year's top matriculant, and I think it is timely to talk about that, the top matriculant in the country was a product of this program that BP is running together with Vince. So it is important, I thought it would be important for me just to indicate that as a sector, you know, we did lose quite a capable leader who was committed to this country, even though you are a Frenchman. I also thought it's important just to remind and say that as the petroleum regulation branch, we look after, Chairperson, 9 million engines, including that engine. We make them go, 9 million of them as a minimum. And the turnover in this sector is 270 billion rand. 6.5% contribution to GDP. So I think it's important, 90,000 employees that are supported by this sector. So there is no room really for error in regulation as well as in operation. 4,200 sites for retail that we have to look after.
9 million engines of vehicles.
Of vehicles, of aircraft, of vessels, and that is what we supported by this sector. Nothing moves. In fact, some of the electricity is also generated in this country using diesel engines.
Excluding any engine with any industry. They are minuscule in numbers.
Well, I think at this stage, Chairperson, most of the engines are run on this. Mr. Mbambo spoke about the Navy, and I think there he was referring to the nuclear-powered vessels. And I don't think we have any in this country. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to move to the second because we've been directed to talk about where we fell short. Just to say that on this one very important program that we are starting a program at the Department of independently verifying the fuel specifications at all service stations. We are going to do independent tests to make sure that if a retailer says in your car you are putting in 50 ppm of diesel, it's actually 50 ppm. At the moment, there is self-certification by the oil companies, and we believe that we need to introduce this so that we make sure that every year we test 750, we take 750 samples out of the 4,200 sites that I spoke about. Now, we think that this will ensure that at any given time no one takes chances in terms of, you know, selling 500 ppm as 50 ppm. I must say that there is already a program that is running by the revenue services where they check to make sure that the diesel is not mixed with the paraffin. But on our side, we are going to check compliance with fuel specifications. Now, for this, we need an independent laboratory, a service provider that is going to do this. The tender did go out, and the process is now could not be concluded in the last quarter. We're a bit too ambitious in terms of how quickly the process could unfold. I must indicate that the last visits to the laboratories are being conducted as we speak, so we expect that the winning bidder, which has to be, you know, a highly reputable laboratory, because what we will be doing there requires somebody who has been doing this for years. So there is that evaluation that is ongoing, Chairperson. Next slide. The next one is compliance with the prescribed time frame. Now, in terms of this, we received in the last quarter 56 applications. New to industry applications, and we were able to complete 47 of those within the 60 days. Now, the 60 days is not prescribed by law. The law requires that we must do all applications within 90 days. The 60 days is a commitment that was made by the minister to say that in order to unlock the jobs, we need to fast-track the issuing of licenses. And we did fall short. We came in at 83.9%. And this is partly because the information, Chairperson, that we require from applicants is not submitted on time. And some of the applicants, in fact, particularly with regard to clearance certificates for tax, they tend to delay in submitting that, and we therefore cannot finalize those applications. Again, as I said, in terms of the law, it is a 90-day turnaround time. Next slide. Okay. one, Chairperson, this one talks to historical applications that were in our system. Now, these applications are in our system because the applicants have not been giving us information in order to conclude. And we cannot finalize an application if we don't have all the information. What we have started doing now is to give all of those people 14 days within which they are supposed to submit information. And if they don't, we then decline the application. What we have seen happening, Chairperson, is that once we do that, they then appeal to the minister. And when they appeal to the minister, they then submit all the information that they have not been submitting. And then in the end, we're asked then to reevaluate. And it is creating an administrative burden, basically, on the minister, because now people don't submit to us, but when we decline, they then submit the information to the minister. And this is something where we believe now we need to make an appeal to the oil companies. We are doing that to make sure that they exert pressure on the retailers who basically sell their products, in order that they can submit information timely. What we've also decided to do is that in the regions where we accept this application, we are now not going to accept somebody promising that I will bring the tax clearance certificate in 2 weeks, and then we accept that application subject. We're not going to do that. There may be complaints that come to say that we are not accepting applications, but in order for us not to sit with a backlog, we've decided to tighten the acceptance criteria. Then on the next slide, there is an arbitration request that we received, and as indicated there, we could not complete that within the prescribed time frame because we're still waiting in this regard for BP to make representations to the controller. Then the next, on the next slide, I think there are two very important issues here that I want to talk to. One is the BFP basic fuel price mechanism review. That process is still not going according to plan. And I must say here, Chairperson, that we've decided to adopt an approach that says we're not going to use a consultant to do this. We're going to do this in-house so that we make sure this is now the BFP review, so that we make sure that going forward, the department has the capability of actually doing this from first principles. Now, we have had to send people on training, and we have a company that we're working with, which is a reputable international company that provides information on pricing, Thomson Reuters, and we are having one last engagement in November. I will say this, Chairperson, that in this review of the BFP, we should not be expecting a lot. We have said that before. We have looked at this, and you know, I don't think that there is a lot that we can expect in terms of further improvements. There are certain areas that have gone up, there are certain areas that have come down. And, you know, at the end of the day, you will find that we will come up with a pricing mechanism that perhaps could save a few cents, but nothing really major in that regard. But we are still committed to completing this by March 2014. and we believe that we can achieve this. On the other one, it's called my MDZ, which stands for my magisterial district zones. We want to do a review of, you know, how much basically it costs to transport fuel to those different zones. Now, that is dependent on the work that Transnet is doing in terms of the pipeline, because it is going to determine where basically the major depots are going to be. And we feel that we should not accelerate this program ahead of Transnet conclusion of its work on the terminals of the pipeline. Now, there are some delays in as far as concluding those terminals. And the information we have now is that those will be completed by September 2014. And that means that we cannot definitively conclude this review before that time, because they may decide to, you know, move a terminal, and then that then has an impact on the calculation itself. On the implementation of a regulatory accounting system, this we are supposed to conclude in the end of November, and basically we are on track to complete this. The margins will be adjusted in December to be in line with the new regulatory accounting system. So I think even though it reflects the partially achieved, this in any case we're supposed to conclude in November, and so that the public sees the outcome in December when the new margins for wholesale and retail are announced by the minister. We're on track to achieve that, Jefferson. I can say that with full confidence. The next one is a bit of a good news story that is being delayed. We want to implement a new system of determining the retail margin of paraffin. Now, we want to fix this because currently it moves with the BFP, the percentage of the BFP, and we want to fix it going forward. What has happened in this is that we thought that what we have come up with is too good to be true, and we have sent a team back to say, let's look at the unintended consequences, because it looks like what may come out of here will, you know, will alter the retail, what people pay for paraffin going forward. But what we want to prevent is a situation where the retailers now no longer want to carry paraffin because the margin is very limited. And so what we've said, let's look at whether, you know, this is sustainable, or we will be solving one problem and then creating another problem of shortages going forward. But I must say here, Chair, that, you know, depending on what we come up with in terms of managing the unintended consequences, basically this will change the lives of people tremendously. Our target is that by next winter, we should have come up with a pricing framework which will reduce the price of paraffin by, you know, I think, Jefferson, it's safe to say that it will be upward of 50 cents at this stage. the reduction. Then the other one, that second last one I need to talk to, is that in terms of the regulatory accounting system, we need to determine an asset base for a benchmark servitation. Now that work, we ourselves, are not in a position to do that in-house. So we are going to be looking for service providers. We did look for them. Technically, they did not meet our specifications, and we are going to go out now again to look for service providers to do this for us. Then the last issue, Chairperson, is a bit of a difficult one, in a sense that it is a core shared responsibility with our policy branch. In fact, the biofuels issues are being led by the policy branch. And so what I may report here, Chairperson, may be outdated, and when the policy branch reports, it may be that they may have new information, because Mkize is the champion of this particular deliverable. But this is work. There has been progress in as far as biofuels is concerned, in the sense that at least the date for the mandatory blending has been determined by the minister. But what now needs to happen is that the department, National Treasury, and National Treasury basically have to work to finalize this pricing framework. And that, unfortunately, we could not conclude during the second quarter. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Torella. We'll now proceed to the branch energy programs and projects by Dr. Vusi Barnard.
Thank you, Anthony, Chair, Honourable Members. Sorry. Quarter one and two, as has been also alluded to my colleague, is normally a difficult one in new projects, because you start off, you order, you wait for your hardware to arrive. So normally you'll see, if you look at your delivery rate, and we have 18 years of data on some of the projects, it's normally your first two quarters is not 30% of your delivery. It's normally closer to 30-35%. So we also try, in terms of targets, we sit in the same way. And in the last introductory point I want to make is that it's also the first quarter for our municipalities. Remember, their financial year starting in July. So just that as background. We just can deal with the partially and non-achieved activities, and I can say it's not many of them, luckily. The first, on the grid application, the target is 85,000 connections, 65,000 connections. We achieved just under 59,000. It's therefore partially achieved. I can just mention that in total for this year, 92,000 connections have been made. Now, if you compare that with all the other years, it's probably 22,000 more than we have reached at this point in time. So we're confident that we will exceed that 200,000 connections. As been said, your first two quarters is normally your slow quarters, and you pick up in the third and the fourth quarter. So really, to be at 92,000 is quite an achievement. But we set above half for ourselves, so therefore it's unachieved. For the non-grid, they're not achieved. I will deal with this more in detail when we deal with the specific questions afterwards. But in a nutshell, it's because the contracts have been signed late, and the contractors started late. But we are full of confidence. I'll also share with you information lately how we're going to catch up on that one. The next partial achieved one is on slide 28. Sorry. The next couple of slides deals with new build lines and refurbished lines. Now, in all of these, as well as the new build and refurbished upgrade substations, all of that is partially achieved. Now, that is due to the fact that, and it's a way I think we structured our target, and make sure we're going to change that target, because it's really difficult to measure a delivery of a line. If you build a line for 10 kilometers, then you're going to need 720 then some type of line, poles, and then you have to string it. Now, you can be far down the track with that, but it's not fully streamed. And it's only, you can only use it when it's 100% finished. Fixing that anomaly. So therefore, you're not going to have, while you pursue the projects, easily 100%, or even you can't say 40%. It's very difficult. Where do you make judgment? Is it on the amount of money being spent, or you're going to take the total construction operation? So we're going to change that. But the bottom line is, all of the projects are currently in operation, and we're confident that those next couple of slides that Vikas is going to ask you just move through them. Here's the list of the various projects that's happening on the ground for the new build, and then for the upgrade, and then for the substations, exactly the same. Six new builds, which order you're just ordering. Some of them, do civil works. So all of these substations are currently, this work being done on. The same with the new build ones on slide 33, and I listed all the different projects in the various provinces. That we targeted. Sure, the next.
Wait, you jumped a very interesting slide 27, close to Prof. and Ma Snowblas heart. Because I IEC, please.
I have an impression we're just dealing with
it's achieved.
It's achieved, yeah.
First one, me. I remember, I think we need to up the target. I would like that one only say partially achieved. No, 45% of Venice has never been seen achieving this one. So that we keep on chasing them.
Okay, we take that with honor to just
no, my give us a target. Figure there, honestly. Okay, carry on.
Okay, but one on that one. Two aspects and thanks for that. The one is that when this is in Nativity, the IEC's Integrated Energy Centres, where we establish energy activities, energy cells, points in deep rural areas, normally anchored around your petroleum companies' outlets, where a normal, normally in commercial, wouldn't make commercial sense, and all the local petroleum companies are very active in this, so we need to just twist their arms a bit more to get more out of this. But I must also say here that we are struggling a bit with the management of these, so we're busy. I don't want to see us increasing right now. We rather have to look at the model of ours to make it financially operationally more viable, because we are struggling in some areas. We're building, we implement, but in some areas we are struggling to keep it up and running. But we are dealing, we have a task team now, with all the petroleum companies to come up with a better implementation model. But we are producing, we are delivering on that one. But yeah, I agree with you, we need to up on that one. The next one that we haven't achieved, I dealt with the substations, the NV new and upgrade lines, that's all partly achieved. And then the others are all achieved, and then the only one that's not achieved, which we are monitoring, is the one on slide 30. 38 on Salawi Jesus. Here we are monitoring the installation of that. I think with Green Energy section, when they deal with their target, they also deal with the delivery side of it. So we're monitoring it, and because of the change in the model and contracting process, the delivery is slightly lower than was anticipated. So we also monitored less than what was supposed to be monitored. That's on our side. The targets for the first two quarters in programs and projects.
Thank you, Dr. Barnes. I'll now request Michelizi to present on behalf of Mr. Abani.
Thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. For the presentation on the energy policy and planning units, I've got various colleagues sitting on my right hand side there, who will be talking to the different sections of the different targets and quarterly targets in the annual report. I've got Mr. Jabulani Ndlovube, who will talk to the issues relating to gas infrastructure plan, liquid fuels roadmap, and Petroleum Products Act. Mr. Tokozisi will talk to the issues related to the ISMO bill and other electricity matters, such as the transmission development plan and the distribution infrastructure plan. Ms. Kathy will talk to all the renewable energy issues, and then Mr. Musela will talk to the energy efficiency targets. So the presentation also, energy policy and planning currently also incorporate the Clean Energy Chief Directorate. So the next two programs, basically programs 2 and 5, will do them at the same time, and on all those representatives there. And I think it's just also, I want to understand, explain that obviously this unit, as a unit responsible for policy development, is really the hub of the mandate of the department, and basically consolidates chief directorates that were previously placed across two different directorates. And this was really an effort to try to get us to move away from a silo-based approach to policy formulation. And we are making efforts to really try and consolidate that and work to a move where we can have policies that are basically informed on the same fact base. So that is actually a work in progress, and I believe that it's actually much more easier said than done, as there are various pieces of projects and programs that are currently taking place. So if I just basically then start on the first page there. As I indicated, I will get Ms. Kasa to talk more to the energy efficiency monitoring issues and the targets. But really what we're trying to do is that it's currently energy efficiency target monitoring system that's currently under development. And the idea for that is really to start being able to monitor the effectiveness of different of the energy efficiency, national energy efficiency strategy, which was promulgated. And with regards to the gas infrastructure roadmap and the transmission and development plan and the distribution of, infrastructure plan, Tokozisi will talk to that, but in that regard, is that because we're trying to work to an end of getting everything consolidated, the idea is that when we finally publish the final IEP, we would have actually taken into consideration work that is being done within those various projects and incorporated them into the final IEP recommendations. If you can please move on to the next slide. The draft IEP report has been actually tabled in cabinet and approved, and we're currently conducting stakeholder workshops. We've completed the workshop for Johannesburg. We're currently conducting workshops in all other provinces. The plan, as I indicated, is to actually start incorporating issues of transmission and distribution in the plan. However, that has actually not been included as part of the plan itself, as this work is currently taking place in parallel. The liquid fuels infrastructure roadmap, Mr. Jovo will speak more in detail about the status of that particular project. But what is happening at the moment is that we have actually been working closely with the team that's working on the liquid fuels infrastructure roadmap to try and align the underlying assumptions which have been made within that particular plan. But the level of integration with the IEP itself has not actually taken place at this stage. If you can move on to the next slide. Okay, this slide here talks to issues of energy data collection and compilation of energy statistics. I think we are making slow progress in this regard in certain areas, and more specifically for our routine collected data and for our routine energy statistics, in the sense that, especially with regard to the oil or petroleum sector data, and I think it's been much more sort of possible to address the issues in this regard because we actually collect the data directly from the oil companies. And they actually started publishing statistics on our website on a quarterly basis, which obviously is able to provide our users with more up-to-date energy statistics as compared before. And we also then are able to meet our reporting to international organizations such as the International Energy Agency and the International Energy Forum with more up-to-date petroleum production and consumption information. However, the same cannot be said with regards to the coal data. We're still experiencing challenges in that regard. And I think it's we don't collect the data directly from the mining houses, but rely on our sister department, the Department of Mineral Resources, to actually pass through the coal and sort of production and consumption data through to us. However, in efforts to try and address those issues, we are constantly engaging with them and have acknowledged that they have had historical challenges or quality issues with some of their data, and it's something that they're also working on to address. So through that process, we hope that in the next financial year, we'll be able to report better statistics. And this is really the main reason why you see that in terms of the energy balances, only have the 2010 energy balances finalized, while for 2011, those are actually still under development. If you can please move on to the next slide. I won't talk into detail around these issues. I think I'll get Ms. Gandlovu to talk about the Petroleum Products Act and the Gas Act. And then I'll get Ntokozisi to talk about the infrastructure, the transmission distribution infrastructure and the DIP as well. I think from here I can actually hand over to my colleagues to speak to those specific slides. And then following on straight from there, if you could then go to the clean energy presentation as well, where most of the energy efficiency and renewable energy targets are specified. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I will be talking on the issue of the liquid fuel infrastructure roadmap. I must first start by saying that that report had two components. The first one was the report on the audit of refineries and the overall report on the infrastructure and projections, of course, for up to 2030. And in fact, I must say that the way it has been put there of not being achieved at all is not really accurate. We have received the report on the audit of refineries and the 20-year liquid infrastructure roadmap. However, the 20-year liquid infrastructure roadmap does not meet our expectations, and we have actually sent it back to the consultants to review it, and we have stated our concerns. But I must mention that the report on the refineries has been dealt with extensively. Currently, we are preparing a submission to the minister to have it approved, and I hope that will become a matter of public consumption. That is as far as the 20-year liquid report. The rest I then can leave for maybe for question. If there is any other explanation that I need to provide, I'm prepared to do so. The issue of the Gas Act and the Petroleum Product Act. The Gas Act, I think a lot of work has been done already, although there's no target there. But I must say that there have been consultations throughout all provinces for gathering some inputs, and the such consultation now has been concluded, and the section working on it, they are actually now consolidating those inputs. Hopefully then there's going to be another workshop when actually the final report will be tabled internally, and of course at a later stage it will be published for public consumption. The Petroleum Product Act, or the amendment of the Petroleum Product Act, in fact, if I can remember, was actually moved to the next financial year. However, we have actually done a lot in terms of amending it and also gathering some inputs internally. And we have actually even consulted the state law advisor. And I think we are now busy actually incorporating those comments into the Petroleum Product Act. And maybe I should mention that our approach to this was to repeal it altogether. Although the provisions would not be removed until the bill becomes an act. But that is what we are doing, because we discovered that there were a lot of inputs indicating that we need to actually just to repeal it and start from scratch. That's all what I can say at the moment.
Once again, good morning to the chair and to the members. I will be reporting on the issue with regards to the transmission development plan as well as distribution infrastructure plan, and obviously talk to the legislation as well that is highlighted here. And however, there is some topics which probably, according to the panel here, there is no one who might cover, but I will try and cover the issue regarding the development of indicators for the electricity supply. Obviously, there is no target according to the document in front of us, but it's safe to say that within the electricity sector, indicators are basically there that are used to measure the security of electricity supply. However, what we need to do as a department, basically we need to decide upon which indicators are we going to base our electricity supply security measures upon, because there is a plethora of indicators out there. But obviously we just have to focus on a number of them that are key, that reflects first of all our consumption as well as taking into account the structure of the network that South Africa has. With regards to the transmission development plan as well as the distribution infrastructure plan, as Ms. Mwazisi has alluded to before, that work is happening in parallel with the IEP. Basically, that work started some time ago. Remember, there was a transmission development plan that was done and published around 2010 from EFCOM. So basically, given that we have now started to implement some projects with regards to the integrated resource plan, basically it's prudent that we review those plans and also take into account some challenges that we have encountered with regards to the connection of the renewable IPP projects. So basically, upon the finalization of the IEP, basically that report probably will be followed soon. With regards to the Electricity Regulation and the National Electricity Regulation Act, basically, while those draft bills were at the state law advisors, as we had alluded to the committees during our visits before, we received an instruction that said those bills had to be resubmitted to cabinet. Basically, we have completed a submission that probably has been either finalized or is being approved at the ministerial level, so that those two bills can then recirculate to cabinet to get a fresh approval. But what then that would do, it means once those set in cabinet, it means then we have then to go to a lengthy network process again before those bills come here. But by and large, we have, as the department, we have done what we have to do with regards to those bills. But I think the challenge was just probably the interpretation of how to proceed, keeping the nature of the amendments that we were seeking from those bills. That's why probably got the instruction to say, okay, take this bill back again to cabinet to get a sort of a new approval to table them to parliament. The other issue which is partially achieved
is the bidding documents in respect of Window 3 of the REIPP gas based programs. The Renewable Energy IPP program, Window 3, basically has been concluded. Unfortunately, that today is the day that we're supposed to make the announcement of the successful bidders, but due to the unavailability of our principals, then that is only going to happen when our principals have seen the report and obviously have approved those. But basically, REIPP Window 3 is complete. With regards to the baseboat project, basically, we are still in a process of concluding some documentation with regards to those. Once those are done, obviously, then we will also go to market to make sure that we effect the determination that was made by the minister around December 2012. And that's all from me.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable members, I think I'm on slide. I'll move to the next slide in terms of clean energy, but on the previous slide, Chair, there was an issue around promulgated policy for standard offer scheme for solar water heater. What I will do in the next slide, I'll start with the solar water heater program in terms of actually also taking back in terms of that particular program, and then I'll go back to the first item. If you can just move to the next slide, and sorry, the next slide again, just so that I can start with the solar water heater program. In terms of the solar water heater program, Chair, I think Dr. Panas has reflected, I think it's the first line and the second line in terms of the transition for a revised contracting model. That is a background, Chair. The solar water heater program is actually transitioning from what we call a rebate program to a new contracting model in two different models of implementation. One of those, in terms of technologies, is around the high pressure system, which is actually more of a rebate. And then the second one is around the low pressure system, which is also, there is a component of a rebate that we're implementing before. But now what we're focusing in terms of the low pressure systems, focusing on what we call a load reduction model, where a solar geyser is actually installed in houses below a certain threshold of LSM that actually have an electricity geyser. So, and then there will be a new contracting model where it will be a competitive bidding process. So the process now, we are transitioning from that rebate model to what we call a new contracting model. I think the process has actually been completed. One of the things that we did in terms of that process to ensure that we complete the process on plan aspect was to ensure that after the National Treasury is published on instruction for a procurement of local geysers, we to issue what we call a request for information and registration for all local manufacturers of solar geysers. And then in that process, we had what we call a briefing session on the 28th of August. And then around about 51 companies, current and prospective local manufacturers submitted, and then we have completed that evaluation process. In relation to the what we call the standard offer modeling process, if another implementation model where we'll be buying kilowatt hour produced or saved through the installation of a geyser, but the payment period will be an extended process in terms of those actually buying that. It's actually not an easy aspect. That's why we're not actually committed to that process, because we're consulting with NERSA and other stakeholders in terms of how do we then actually pay back the money, because if a geyser is 10,000 rand, in terms of the standard offer model, we'll actually be paying for an extended period, but it's just a matter of now collecting that money. I think Dr. Panas has also reflected on the other bullet on the number of systems installed. It reflects here 80,000, but it should actually talk what Dr. Panas has actually presented of around about 130,000 systems. Unfortunately, in terms of what we've installed now from April up until now September, it's roughly around about 30,000 systems. But we should call, Chair, that the 130,000 systems that Dr. Panas talked to is the annual target. It's not necessarily a quarterly target. So we've actually stalled the process in terms of installation because it is slowing down, because one of the things that must be completed now is to ensure that every system that is procured or subsidized has actually a local manufacturing footprint. And the systems that were installed from April until now are purely coming from what we normally call the rebate program. But it's a combination of locally produced and locally and imported goods. But from now onwards, the focus is more on those that are actually locally produced. I think once we complete the process, where the DPS is going to, the South African Bureau of Standards is going to assist us to verify the local content based on the output of what companies have submitted to us, I think it's going to be more faster than before. And if I can move back in terms of the previous slide, I will start with from the beginning. I think Ms. Kasa will talk about the last sentence on feasibility study on soil water heater, and Mr. Nambau will actually talk about the other one on the second slide. But on the municipality program, that is the background, Chair. He's saying that we have to develop energy consumption baseline from 10 municipalities. That particular component is coming on what we call a municipal energy efficiency and demand side management, where we started that program a couple of years ago. But currently in the 13-14 financial year, we're working with 30 municipalities. And then the first quarterly target in terms of this particular process was to engage municipalities and select 10 municipalities that will actually give us a complete picture of a municipal energy consumption. That one was completed. In the last quarter, the second quarter, the focus was to develop what we call a baseline development approach, piloting. We've completed in terms of the templates and the baseline calculation methodologies and all those things. But we have not yet achieved in terms of that pilot because most of them have requested a postponement of submitting of the business plan. So the business plan, around about 18 of them came on the 20th of October, which had capacity to reduce around about 2.5 gigawatt hours. But it was for this current quarter, not the second quarter. So one of the things that we've done, we've completed that process in terms of piloting. Most of the municipalities submitted, but they didn't submit by the end of September. They submitted in the current quarter, which is the third quarter. But I think we're in progress in terms of achieving that. The last quarter for us, we actually have at least a minimum of 10 municipalities with the complete energy consumption baseline. The reason that we're doing that, Chair, is to ensure that also based on lessons learned from the previous experience of this program was that most of the municipalities will just actually start retrofitting or changing some of the inefficient technologies without actually necessarily understanding their baseline. So it's to ensure that at least we know where we're coming from. And then that particular process is in relation to also what was reflected as an energy efficiency monitoring systems, which is also related to the second line there, which is the promulgation of a revised climate-approved strategy, where we're dealing with the energy efficiency monitoring systems, where the focus is to have baseline in all sectors, specifically in this case for the municipality program. The energy efficiency monitoring system, I think we started developing that in 2011. We've came up with what we call pilot report by the end of the last financial year. But one of the things that we're doing now, moving forward...
Where are we now?
We're on the one that is being promulgation of revised climate approach strategy.
Okay.
But I was linking that with what was referred to as an energy efficiency monitoring system. So it's just to complete that one and two, and then to reflect that both those bullets, the strategy will be implemented or monitored through what we call an energy efficiency monitoring system. But the input data there will be what we call an energy consumption baseline. Lastly, Chair, from my side is the stakeholder consultation on the energy conservation scheme, where we're supposed to contract 10 industrial companies. We're partially achieved that because although we drafted rules in the last financial year, but one of the things that we're supposed to do this year is to have what we call a stakeholder consultation. One of the consultations that we did was to meet with the regulator, NERSA, and also in a view of selecting these 10 industrial companies to pilot it. That process is actually ongoing, Chair, especially because from now in the third quarter and the last quarter, we just have to run a series of stakeholder consultation on the energy conservation scheme. The energy conservation scheme is purely up, is just a matter of setting up rules in case of emergency in terms of the electricity shortage, so that we can finally be able to implement those particular rules. From there, Chair, I will hand over to Madam Pastor to actually complete feasibility study on solar, and that's the Tagalan will talk about the CDM and the PIN development programs.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the solar park project, I just want to start off by indicating again to honourable members that the solar park study is being done in the Northern Cape province. And originally we had intended to look at one site, which was Addington. Through delays that we experienced in obtaining land access, we then found an alternative site in Prisca. The site in Prisca that was allocated was about just over 9,000 hectares. But when we started, we issued tenders and then consultants were appointed. When high-level assessments were done, we realized that the utilizable land is approximately just over 1,000 hectares,
and that could only accommodate about 450 megawatts. And the intention of the feasibility study was to do a detailed assessment up to that on a site that could accommodate at least 1,000 megawatts. So we have since then looked for, with cooperation of the Siyatapa municipality, we have since found an alternative site in Kilda, which would then be able to accommodate the 1,000 megawatts. But unfortunately, this would has got the potential of basically delaying our delivery period, because we had through the instruction of the minister agreed to have the feasibility study done within 6 months, and it was to be delivered then in January. So what is happening now, because the site is not so suitable for the 1,000 megawatts, we're moving to Kilda. We need to finalize or get consent from the Department of Land and Rural Development as well as Public Works on using the Kilda farm for the project. There is also then the additional study that we are doing in Upington for another 1,000 megawatts, which is a site that is close to the Eskom solar project site. So on both sites, we have already appointed consultants who then do the studies. The studies, we basically put three main components. It's an overall comprehensive feasibility study that looks at various components like your financial and investment analysis. It looks at socioeconomic issues, cost-benefit analysis for the solar park, and also the technology mix and the actual site suitability for the infrastructure that would be put there. So in addition to that, there are specialist studies, the environmental impact assessment, as well as geotechnical assessment to check whether the land itself is, or the soil itself is suitable to hold the infrastructure that would be put there. So on all of those, there is progress that is being made. We said that it's not achieved simply because we don't necessarily have an approved feasibility study right now, but there is progress being made on the feasibility studies themselves. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. When I was introducing myself, you asked me what is designated national authority. Please allow me to give just a brief overview of that. Basically, designated national authority is the custodian of clean development mechanism under the Kyoto Protocol of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. The designated national authority was established under the National Environmental Management Act, 107 of 1988, and it was the main function of the DNA is to review or to evaluate the approved CDM project. Therefore, we understand that the main duties to be performed is to assist the country in combating the efforts to combat climate change, if I may put it that way, and also to address the issues of sustainable development and to secure adequate share of CDM investment. I think that will be sufficient. Going to slide 48, wherein it's talking about the submitted PIN and PDD. The PIN is the project ID note, and the PDD is the project design document. And the two PINs that have been received within the previous quarter has been achieved. The ones that have not yet been achieved is the two fully-fledged project design documents. This is simply because, according to the standard operating procedure of approving the project, we have got 45 working days to ensure that we evaluate, and the project has been sent for public comments. And with all those processes that we need to follow, it takes 45 working days. So these two projects were just received beginning of September. Therefore, it's still within the time frame.
you might be surprised at why only two projects. The reason for this low income uptake is simply because the first commitment period has elapsed of the Kyoto Protocol, and now we have just adopted the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. And as such, there are still a lot of uncertainties in the carbon market. Therefore, there are issues that still need to be resolved at the international platforms. And as such, then we can see more uptake as opposed to maybe last year, where within a quarter we were able to receive more than 20 projects. Going to the next one, which talks to promotion of CDM. Under the promotion of CDM, we have managed to have a workshop that was achieved. I'll look to the draft CDM status report. The draft CDM status report, basically, it tells us about the progress of the implementation of CDM in South Africa, and what are the challenges and how can such challenges be resolved. This one was a bit late because in the process we also make sure that all our CDM stakeholders, they make inputs into the document, and as such it was a bit tough to get input from project developers, which are private companies. But finally, we managed to get enough inputs, and all is in order. We have completed the draft, and it's in the process of obtaining approval by the Director General and the Minister of the Department. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are now done with the presentations for our line function components. We'll now start with support services, led by Mr. Lucas Mwaozi, who is representing the Chief Operations Officer, Msugo, who is currently, not around. Mr. Mwaozi.
Thank you, Chairperson, and as well as the members of the committee. Chairperson, before I start with the performance in relation to our targets, which is on slide 52, I just want to share with the Chairperson and the members that after the completion of the first two quarters, the first one which was presented previously, the second one which is this one, the department realized that we need to review all the performance indicators in the 1314 APP. I must say, Chairperson and members, that the department is in the process of revising the performance indicator in the APP so that we begin to have an ops plan, which ops plan will carry some of the functions or tasks that are not supposed to be in the APP. That process is at an advanced stage. What we're going to do, we are going to be engaging with the various branch heads. Then thereafter, we'll then be making a relevant presentation together with the submission to the DG and the minister, whereafter it will find its way to the portfolio committees, to the portfolio committee. I thought that I must share that, Chairperson, because you must have realized that when we were presenting the annual report, we realized that some of the targets were not met. The reason was that was not that the department was not working hard to meet those targets. It was simply because some of the performance indicators were not weighted correctly, but also it was also found that some targets were found to be outside of the control of the DOE. So those which are of such a nature, we are planning to remove them from the APP, but it will not affect the actual targets that are linked with the EME, and try to migrate them to be situated at the operational plan, which we will share with the committee in due course. Having said that, Chair, I am going to be presenting the targets that were set to be implemented by the governance and compliance branch, only the partially achieved and the not achieved. On slide 52, risk management implementation plan and register to be presented at the audit committee. Chair, this implementation plan has indeed been presented before the risk management committee It is about to be presented at the audit committee, which is going to convene on the 27th of November this month. So, meaning that when we come back in the third quarter, that would have been achieved. On slide number 56, Chairperson and members, you'll notice that previously we did spoke about the service delivery improvement plan, which was also reported at by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation to say that the department does not have a service delivery improvement plan. This is a key document that is required in terms of law by all heads of departments to have it, so that we are able to understand the areas and the service delivery improvement areas which we need to work on as an institution, so that we are able to meet the expectation of our beneficiaries out there. I must say, Chair, that the SDIP process has started within the department. We have a draft that has been developed, which is in place. That draft is at a point where we need to finalize it. We just have to engage with the relevant line functions and also the support functions, so that the relevant branches are able to say these are areas where we need to improve as a department, and then thereafter be approved and then be produced for consumption by the relevant people, so that they begin to understand and to know how are we going to deal according to standard in addressing the issues that we think are important in terms of what they are expecting from the department. Slide number 56, Chairperson, you will see there we were supposed to commission an external evaluation of the energy data. But it is our submission as the corporate and governance branch that this task has actually been
addressed. You see slide number 56, there's something on the screen. Something different on the screen. Can you fix that?
58, my apology, Chair. Number 58, my sincere apology. This is about the correction of the energy-related data by way of conducting those evaluations. It was supposed to be done by us as the M&E in the corporate, in the governance and compliance branch. However, due to the fact that it was not funded, we could not achieve it. However, this task has been addressed by the energy and policy planning unit on slide number 45, previously when Ms. Chiliza Ramuzizi was making a presentation. This is one of the issues, Chair, which we think from the planning perspective, like this specific task was supposed to be in the ops lane instead of being on the APP and be an annual target. But it's something that you see as we proceed with the revision of the APP that will be addressed as well. If you allow me to move forward, Chair, I will be correctly on slide number 62. Slide number 62, which was the first strategic plan and APPs of the Schedule 3A SOEs. They've in fact submitted all of them, Chair. They have to be reviewed by the minister. The only one that was late was that one of NNR and NERSA. But we are hoping to finalize this week. And then they will all of them be submitted to the minister in relation to the planning of the outward year, Chairperson, which is next year's ADP. So I think that by the end of this month, we will be in line in terms of meeting the target. And then on slide number 64 is the performance reports of the SOE. All SOEs, Chairperson, are supposed to be reporting to the shareholder on a quarterly basis. The reports have been received, all of them, and we have submitted through a proper submission to the minister, and we expect that that particular submission would have been approved by the minister at this stage. But the reports as well as the submissions are all in the minister's desk. Slide number 66. Chair, here we are talking about the SOT. The SOP is a document that is meant to standard operating procedure. It's a document that is talking to what each and every function across the branches and within the department, how is being done. So that when Mr. Malauzi or Mr. Matubela is not there, somebody who enters into that office or wear those shoes, he or she is able to know and understand from start to finish how to meticulously, step by step, conclude a particular task. This task has been done, Chairperson, but we are annually reviewing it, and then we link it to the compliance schedule, the compliance framework. But however, what we are doing now, we are consolidating the inputs which we have reviewed this year because it would have been done last year. And then those inputs, once they've been consolidated, they will then be tabled again before EXCO and MANCO. And then if we get the buy-in from them, it will then be submitted to the relevant authorities for approval and signature prior to implementation. Slide number 67. One performance report submitted to the audit committee. I must indicate to the chair and the members that our audit and risk committee has requested that on a quarterly basis, they also want to have an insight into the program performance of the department. So we are going to be presenting the program performance in relation to the first quarter, but already because we are now in the second quarter, we will also be presenting our program performance information to them. This is done in order for them to have a sense as to how are we progressing in terms of meeting our target, but also to assist us in tracking the areas where we might find ourselves wanting when we have to submit the program performance to the Auditor General in and around May. Remember, Chairperson and members, that every year the program performance or performance information is supposed to be submitted to the Auditor General prior to it being audited, and then they give an opinion as to whether the department has performed well, complied with laws, and etc. So we will be presenting this first quarter program performance information on the 27th of November in the Audit and Risk Committee. Slide number 71 is one progress report on the implementation of international energy sector agreements. We got these international agreements, Chairperson, that we need to submit progress report on a quarterly basis to the minister. The draft report is in place, and it is going to be submitted to the minister. We were unable to submit it on time due to certain unforeseen circumstances, but I must say, Chairperson, that the draft, we have it, and it's en route to our principals for consideration. Slide number 72 is the SADC prioritized energy sector project where we participated in and contributed. You'll see there we have Botswana for renewable energy efficiency. What has actually happened here for both those, especially the not achieved one, is that the implementation plan part of this project is supposed to be made through obtaining contributions from various government departments, stakeholders, SOEs, and etc. The first round workshop has been completed. In fact, that determination, Chairperson, is supposed to be partially achieved because the first round consultation has been concluded, and that we are now in the process of submitting or taking the submission to the minister for consideration in terms of what has been done and what has been achieved in terms of the first quarter cycle in relation to the SADC prioritized energy project. Thank you, Chair. I think that was the last of my slides.
Thanks, Mr. Mlaudi. I will now proceed with the second quarter presentation of sub-program 1, that is corporate services.
Ricus. Next slide, please. Chairperson, on slide number 24, we've partially achieved in terms of the implementation of phase three of the HR plan. This was delayed by the implementation of the revised structure, particularly in the life function components. This was mainly delayed by the matching and placing process, because we are required to consult with the affected staff members and also obtain their concurrence or their consent in terms of their correct placement. But because of this delay, it has had an impact on finalization of the review of the HR plan, which is currently finalized, and it has gone to the DG for approval. Yesterday I did receive it back. It has been approved. That is the revised HR plan of the Department of Energy. In relation to finalization of the review of phase two of the HR plan, it is indicated that there is no target there. Yes, Chairperson, there's no target because we have already delivered on this. The review report was compiled and submitted to the Department of Public Utilities and Administration on the 30th of June as required. Next slide, please. Next. The compilation of job descriptions and job evaluations for support services and organizational structure. Chairperson, this was partially achieved because we had not as yet completed the preliminary investigation because of the changes that were proposed by the Department of Public Service and Administration. This has been attended to, and the last HR directorate that was consulted was communications, and concurrence has been achieved, and we hope that we will finalize this in the next quarter. Next. The turnaround time for finalization of grievance and misconduct cases. Chairperson, our agreement in our APP was that this will have to be finalized or will have to improve 30 to 45 days. I believe even in the last presentation there was an issue that was raised by the Parliamentary Committee on Energy that we need to improve. Chairperson, we've moved slightly in as far as this is concerned. Four grievances were received in this quarter, of which three are completed in less than 35 days. The other one is a new one. It's a new case, which is only, received, in the last 6 days. And three misconduct cases were received in this quarter, of which two cases have been completed in 45 days and less. There is only one misconduct case that was outstanding. The report has been finalized by the external investigator. I've signed it off yesterday, and the appropriate disciplinary proceedings will be instituted because the charges have also been proposed, and we believe that it will soon be finalized. The 1.8% of employment of persons with disabilities. Chair, we don't have a target because the intention here is to have, reach that target by the fourth quarter, but currently we are moving at 1.27%. Like we indicated in our last presentation, that we put measures in place to ensure that as a department we improve the employment of persons with disabilities in the department. I will deal with that when we deal with the questions that were asked for the last presentation. 47% of women in middle management, we've maintained that target. And currently we are still at 47%, but the intention is to measure, this target fully as, at the end of the financial year. 42.
Can I not just provoke you? I know you can one time, on the third quarter, just employ everyone and reach the target. But also on the other hand, there's no risk simply because you don't necessarily have to have quarterly targets that she may end up missing the point, because when it comes to appointments, this is one of the challenges, not only in the DOE but in other departments, where you keep on having the difficulty to get people. No, just a comment, and don't respond to it. I know it did raise it during the DOE process. You may not set quarterly targets, but in terms of figures, but in terms of effort, it might be helpful.
Not necessarily for us, in any case, that's for you internally. See, to what extent are you really and seriously, you know, making strides to achieve this affirmative action target?
Yeah, Chairperson, maybe I should deal with it now. Chair, we are taking this very seriously. Like I've indicated in the last presentation that because of this kind, you know, the fact that, you know, energy is particularly in the land function component, you know, it's a highly technical department. We have gone out to look for money so that we introduce learnerships that are land function specific. We have secured funding that was given to us in a partnership with the chemical sector, so that we train persons with disabilities for permanent placement in the department immediately on completion of the learnership program. We have brought them on board. I do have the figures here with me. The intention is to ensure that as and when they complete this learnership program and the intensive programs, we deploy them permanently on the establishment of the department, not only in support services components, but also to ensure that even in the line function components, we see persons with disabilities. But Chair, you're 100% right to say that we need to have targets, you know, quarterly, so that we don't fall back to say, no, we'll only measure this at the end of the financial year, you know, because we might be caught with our pants down, you know, and we don't want to be faced with a situation where we say, you know, we could have done this earlier, but the targets will force us to give attention continuously to the deployment of, you know, of persons with disabilities. I agree with you, Chairperson. Thanks, Chairperson. And then in relation to employment of women in SMS positions, same applies. The current figure is 42%, but it is indicated that there is no target, but we are making sure that we are not falling back in terms of losing some of the females. Those persons that are occupied, I mean those positions that are occupied by females, we try our level best to make sure that as and when they become vacant, we recruit females. But the intention is to meet the target as given to us by our principals. At Rikas, partially achieved is the submission of the employment equity analysis report to the Department of Labor on the 1st of October. We are indicating there that this is partially achieved. The submission for and time off of the report was forwarded to the Director General for approval. Chairperson, I can indicate that this has been done. It is in actual fact, you know, a target that has been achieved, because we cannot afford not to submit the report, because this is a compliance matter. Otherwise, if we don't submit on time to the Department of Labor, the department will be put to book. Next. The eight Intel network session conducted, Chairperson, because of budgetary constraints, this was not delivered, but we did go to the Finance Committee to request for additional funding so that we can have these internal network sessions. I must indicate, Chairperson, that our communications chief directorate is operating on a very meager, budget, but the Finance Committee is giving attention to the matter to ensure that there is sufficient funding so that we can communicate both internally and externally as to what we are doing as the Department of Energy. Next, please. Publications, same situation, because of budgetary constraints, we couldn't produce, you know, four publications, but the Finance Committee is giving attention to our request for additional funding in this regard. Proceed. Next. In relation to appeals, like Mr. Matuvela has indicated, we at this court, Chairperson, with, you know, 35 appeals are with the controller for a response and a record of decision, and then 17 have been finalized by our legal services component, and 5 are still en route to the minister. They have been discussed with the legal advisors in the minister's office, and this quarter we've received 25, and 8 are with legal
services for compilation of those submissions with recommendations to be considered by the minister. We are saying partially achieved because there are still appeals that are pending, and we'd like to see these being finalized within the prescribed time frames. Next. Chairperson, our intention is to have, you know, the VPN project completed by the 31st of December. There was slightly a delay, Chairperson, because of the office accommodation issues that we didn't really have control over, because we submit our needs to the Department of Public Works, and when they've identified the appropriate office space, they consult with us, we view the space. But in those areas where we managed to secure office space, we have managed to install, you know, the data lines, and I must indicate that with the funding that has been set aside specifically for this project, we are confident that come 31st of December, all the regional offices will be having data lines installed, and you know, we will have very minimal downtime, you know, in the department. I think that's all from my side, Chairperson. I now request the acting chief financial officer, Mr. Justin Daniel, to proceed with a presentation of the financial management support and services program. Mr. Justin.
Thank you, Mr. Luni. Once again, good afternoon, Chair, honorable members, deputy. It is switched on. Thanks. Okay. I think. Okay. Lots of gymnastics here. We're fine. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll be presenting the financial management services report. Before I commence, Chair, when we presented the annual report of the targets of the financial management services branch for the last financial year, we reported that we had achieved all of the top of our targets last year except for one that was partially achieved, but which was more than 75% complete. Chair, in the current financial year, in quarter one, we have achieved 100% of our targets. We have 21 targets. And in the second quarter as well, the financial services management branch has achieved all of its targets. And this is in line with our attempt, Chair, to strive towards a clean audit and to maintain the achievement of the previous financial year. Chair, all of the targets have been achieved in the branch, and with your permission, Chair, I would perhaps want to focus on one or two key achievements rather than go through all of the achievements, all 21, if it is okay with you, Chair. Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, we'll move to the one target that says 100% of transfers processed. Okay. 100% of approved transfers processed. Just to indicate, Chair, that in terms of the DORA's schedule, monthly transfers are processed to municipalities. We receive a listing or register of approved transfers each month, and approved means that all those municipalities to which the payments are being met have satisfied the criteria for the transfer of the payments. And up to now, we have transferred 100% of all those approved transfers. We will report later on the 12 municipalities that where we have withheld that transfer. The next one that I would like to mention is on the next slide. And that is the 100% of approved invoices paid within 30 days of receipt. This needs to be mentioned, Chair, because it is in line with the PFMA and National Treasury Instruction Note 34, where departments need to pay within 30 days. This is also reported at FOSAD and in Parliament. And Chair, just to indicate that we have maintained this record since August 2012, where we have paid all of our creditors within the 30-day period, and we have reported accordingly to National Treasury. And just to add, Chair, that National Treasury
has indicated that they would want to meet with the department for us to share our success story with them and for them to understand our processes and interventions to achieve this.
They don't trust you.
Sure, I think. Chair, I think the intention is for them to extract some of the processes and interventions so that we could share this with other departments to strive towards the same achievement. Thanks, Chair. And Chair, the next one that we will talk to is the 100% alignment of SEM policies to National Treasury SEM prescripts. Chair, this is also important to mention because this is really one of the big challenges in the public service, the issue of compliance to SEM policies and prescripts. And in the last financial year, we had a very clean record as indicated by the Auditor General, and we want to maintain and sustain this record in the alignment to the SEM policies and prescripts issued by National Treasury. Those would be the three that I would want to mention, Chair. Thank you. We will now proceed to the financial performance report, if that's okay. In the presentation of the financial report, before I make the presentation, just to indicate that the department has received additional questions from the committee for which we have prepared a separate set of responses. However, some of those responses were already included in the presentation as well. And as we proceed, these issues will become clearer. Presentation focuses on the second quarter financial performance. We will look at the overview for economic classification, as well as the top five major cost drivers, and then we'll provide an overview per program, as well as the transfer payment schedule status as the second quarter. On that slide, Chair, we're looking at, in column A, the adjusted budget of 6.503 billion, and the department's main appropriation initially was 6.598 billion. That has been reduced by 94.9 million to the figure we currently see there, which is 6.5 billion. It has been adjusted down by 94.2 million. The expenditure for quarter two was estimated at 3.7 billion, as you can see in column B, and the actual amount spent was 2.8 billion, which is 76.46% of the budget. The budget variance of 873.9 million, as indicated in column D, is mainly attributed to the following areas. In compensation of employees, again, column D, you'll see 11.259 million, and that is the due to the filling in of vacancies. That is mainly due to the additional vacancies following the prioritization of the positions by the Departmental Organizational Development Committee and the final approval by the Finance Committee. We will respond to that in more detail in the follow-up question, Chair, that was given to us. But just to also indicate that some of the approvals or the finalization of those positions have also been delayed by some of the DPSA processes that we had to follow, particularly with regard to, in the CFO branch, us complying with the generic structure of the CFO branch as issued by the DPSA, and that involves certain amount of consultation before we can proceed with some appointments. Also impacting the figure of 11.2 million were payments for unutilized leave from the 2011-12 cycle. Under goods and services, there was 34.1 million spent, and those unspent funds are mainly attributable to projects which should have commenced in the second quarter or should have been paid by the end of the second quarter. Some did commence in the second quarter, but the payments were not effected, and as we operate on a modified cash basis, it would not reflect in the payments. Other projects could not commence due to delays in the procurement processes,
And I think that needs a little bit of highlighting to indicate that when we indicate that there is delays in the procurement processes, it is due to the fact that sometimes we undertake the procurement and we want to make sure that it satisfies the procurement process 100%, and in some instances we will not find the service provider would not meet the requirements after we've gone in and advertised open bid, and in one or two instances we have had to re-advertise those tenders, and that is the due diligence processes that we also have to follow to make sure that we appoint service providers that can deliver. So that is some of the delays we've experienced in that regard. But I need to also mention that with regard to the spending or the underspending on goods and services, this matter has been raised vigorously at our last two finance committee meetings, and we have put in steps to try and speed up the procurement processes, including holding ad hoc BAC meetings or emergency BAC meetings, that's with education committee meetings. And also there is a strong commitment from all the budget managers to accelerate their spending in quarter three. On transfers and subsidies, we show an underspending of 828 million. And that is largely, of that 828 million, the largest amount there is a 767 million, which was not transferred to the EDSM ESCOM project. And the delay on that transfer was due to the fact that the contract was not finalized with the implementing agent. There was a lot of processes involved in finalizing that contract. All those challenges have since been resolved, and the transfers to ESCOM are to commence in quarter three. Okay, I have covered those. Chair, then we would like to report on the major cost drivers in the department. We have listed them.
Hold on. Did I miss the last one, payment for capital assets?
Let's go back. Okay, yes, that's a very small amount that's not been spent, 297,000. It's just below
10%. Listen to his answer. It's a small amount.
297,000.
Okay, fine, we'll keep it. Umamuzel, there is there, listen. Umamele, mamamle. We have a babachi, but zalangati. Okay, fine, proceed.
Chair, maybe I should mention that with respect to the Department of Energy, when you look at the issue of capital assets, that is mostly for, or in fact all for, the internal assets of the department, the equipment and furniture and so on. None of that relates to any infrastructure projects. Okay. If you look at the top spending, we have listed as travel and assistance making up the largest portion of the spending at 37%, 23.8 million.
Honorable Comrade Minister Pravin Gordhan. Not the honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, thanks. I was going to say that in the main, this relates to international multilaterals and international bilaterals, for which we have a list of those, which represent working visits, state visits, work groups, international work groups, and consultative forums. We need to mention that in terms of the local travel chair and international travel, that the department's ICT policy, which was revised sometime last year, has already catered for chief directors and below to be traveling on economy class, and that has already been implemented. So the migration down will be really affecting a very small minority. So we believe we've made strides in that area substantially already to reduce that expenditure. Thank you. With regard to operating leases, we spent 40% of our budget, and that is for the accommodation of our head office plus the 8 regional offices, as the one regional office resides at the head office. The next expenditure that is the third highest is the professional services, consultancy and professional services. And before I get a push on this one, Chair, just to mention that that is specifically for the very highly specialized services and technical services that cannot be done in-house. So they would relate to issues related to the, for example, the monthly fuel price adjustment audits, which has to be performed externally. It would relate to the 20-year liquid fuel infrastructure plan, which needs the external expertise. It would relate to the announcement of certain software that the department requires, which also is technical in nature, and also the modeling approach for the energy efficiency and IEP, and as well as the consultants in terms of the nuclear build program, the framework study and financial structure. So those are considered ones that where the technical expertise needs to be sought from other experts. And then here we have computer services, which accounts for 7% of our high spend, and then the communication costs, which is your mobile 3G and telecommunication costs of the department. So the next set of slides speaks to the spending per program. And perhaps what is common throughout the slides or throughout the programs is that on the compensation of employees, the variances is due mainly to vacancies, as was indicated in the main slide, and the department is currently doing its best to fast-track the filling of these vacancies. We will report on that shortly, one of the question follow-ups, and the department is also in discussions with DPSA, as I've mentioned, regarding some positions brought about by the new structure and the alignment of the new structure to the DPSA generic structure. In goods and services, there is a bit of overspend there, and it's mainly affected by the additional resources required in the minister's office following the changes in that office, and the variance has been offset by an unspent total in compensation of employees. This is the highlight of all the programs. On the total column, on the initial slide, we spoke to that slide or those numbers, but we spoke to it by economic classification, and then I will now go per program and give the detail of this per program. We looked at administration, and then we'll go now to energy policy planning. In energy policy and planning, in terms of goods and services, the overspend is attributable to the number of IEP stakeholder engagement workshops which are undertaken, and this variance is offset by the underspending in the compensation of employees. The compensation of employees line runs throughout all the programs, and that is in the appointment or the vacancies currently experienced. Program 3, energy regulation, there is a savings in compensation of employees again of 2.8 million. And this is also a result of the vacancies following the matching and placing process. So some of the vacancies arise out of the completion of that process, which was completed a few months ago. And so there is steps to address that in the filling of vacancies. And in terms of the savings in goods and services, the process of appointing a service provider to undertake the fuel specification testing project was delayed. This project, however, is now ready to commence, and it has served before the BAC, and it is currently in the process of procurement. With regards to notification and energy programs management, on the goods and services, there is some savings of 4 million, but the reported savings is earmarked for the electrification switch on events and community outreach campaigns scheduled for later. Some of these have already been scheduled but had to be postponed due to the availability of the President, the Minister and the Deputy Minister, and that will be done in the next two quarters. In terms of the transfer payments on this particular program, it mainly relates to the non-grid electrification project, which is currently 33.3 million rand behind in spending. And this delay is mainly due to the finalization of the service provider's contracts
which contributed to this variance. However, in the follow-up, I'm sure Dr. Barnard will elaborate on the steps that are being taken, as indicated to the Finance Committee, and how this process will then be accelerated. Lastly, on the Nuclear Energy and Regulation Program 5, just on the goods and services. Also, this is due to delayed projects, example, Nuclear Awareness Campaign, the study on the cost of nuclear power and advisory services on financing options, models, and solutions for the new nuclear bill program. And the delay was caused by the necessary approvals required and also the delays associated with the procurement process. And in this particular instance, I want to highlight that this is one of the areas where we had gone through a full process. We had reached the evaluations process in the procurement process, and we found that the service providers that had put in their bids did not qualify and had to be re-advertised. So those are some of the challenges that we have experienced and that has caused those delays. Lastly, on clean energy, the savings of $12.5 million in the main is the planned clean energy efficiency awareness campaign that could not commence as planned due to conflicting engagements. But the savings from this project, which cannot be utilized, is being directed to other priorities, firstly within the branch and then within the department. And the savings or the services on a quarterly or month-on-month basis is looked at very vigorously by the Finance Committee, and where underspending is taking place, those steps are being put to address those. And the big one, or the big amount on non-spending on Program 6 is the transfers and subsidies. And as mentioned earlier on, this is mainly as a result of the EESM-ESCOM program, where we have an under budget or a budget underspending of $768 million. That was due to the delays in transferring the funds due to the finalization and implementation of the contract. That is now in place, and transfers will be taking place from this month or from this quarter, the third quarter. Adding to that, there is a total of $5.5 million that was withdrawn from 12 municipalities due to them failing to comply with the DORA requirements. As I mentioned earlier, Chair, that we only transfer approved payments, meaning that the criteria needs to be satisfied before we can transfer any payments. The last slide is a slide that talks to the transfer payments. As members know, this contributes to the largest, over about 93% of the department's budget. It's $6.03 billion. The year-to-date budget was $3.4 billion, and we have transferred $2.6 billion to date. The delays, I have mentioned some of the reasons. On the first line, the EEDSM-ESCOM amount, which now will be transferred from quarter three, now that the contract has been signed. On program four, there was on the non-grid side, $33.27 million unspent due to delays with the extension of the contracts, and that steps have been put in place to address those. And in program five, Chair, there is an underspending of $11.6 million. That is due to the delays in the transfer, due to the delay in the establishing of the Institute's board, and that process is currently receiving attention. And then we have an overspending on the international fees of the IAEA. We had paid an amount of $12 million a few months ago towards the IAEA fees, as that amount, which was paid in the previous year, was rejected at the Reserve Bank. And because we are paying on a modified cash basis, the payment was effected in the current financial year. So those are the big amounts on that, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We've now come to the end of the presentation of the second quarter performance report. As we've indicated, we do have, you know, a list of answers to those questions that were submitted to us last Friday. I will be guided by the chairperson as to how we are.
going forward.
I'm already guilty of having stressed it. Let's take a break.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll now proceed with the list of questions as they were submitted to us last week Friday in the evening. Because most of the questions really relate to the work that is being done by Dr. Barnett in energy programs and projects, we'll allow him an opportunity to make a formal presentation in response to those questions. Thanks.
Agreed where non-grid will be implemented, so we don't have an issue that you
get a surprise that the municipality or Eskom moves into an area that's been identified as an operate area. That's a common understanding now, part of the strategy, and I think that's a huge improvement for the future. There's also a question being asked about the reasons for the underperformance of the branch in terms of projects and programs, specifically with respect to replication. I'm not sure why this comment, because I was impressed with the 10 targets in chief, 5 partially achieved and 2 not achieved. But I can just mention in terms of notification, we did, as I mentioned earlier, 92,000 connections already up to the end of September, and we're very confident that we're going to bring in more than 40,000 more connections than what we targeted for. There's a huge excitement and efficiency gain in the industry after two and a half years of intense working and analyzing and guiding and giving assistance to the industry. If we look at the non-grid one, and I mentioned where there's some challenges, and then just in terms of how we will then speed up, this is just a table at the bottom, honourable members, of the performance up till now, where in which province the rollouts have taken place. What I can mention is that right now all contracts are in place, all the companies are on the ground, and it's really it's rolling out at a good rate. So I'm confident that we will hit the 15,000 without too much problem. We also have just now been appointed 9 additional implementers that will implement some of these non-grid technologies for the country, which will also add to bring in the required target of 15,000 connections non-grid. In terms of, this is again the same question in terms of performance. I just skip that. I think the next one I want to deal with is that a briefing on the C, the request of briefing being given on the M program, and I didn't prepare any slides for that because on Friday there is a session specifically with this committee on the media Adams, so I don't want to repeat the same issues of the 2 days in a row. I think importantly, and the most of my focus.
No. This one is for Friday. I don't know why you were given this.
Yeah.
So it's fine, you've said it.
Yeah.
No big deal. Yeah. Just keep it for Friday.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm going to deal with it now and keep it for Friday.
Yeah. For Friday.
Yeah. Sure, I think the majority of the questions from my side is on the renewable energy IBP program. So I spent quite a number of slides on this issue. This slide is just giving the rundown for between the one and between the two, breakdown different technologies, the amount of megawatts, and then the implementation in different provinces. We can also express it in terms of the map. The orange stroke pink dots represents the one projects for the country. And yellow dots are for those projects between the two. In total, 28 plus 19, it's 47 projects in total. That's an operation. Between the one, we have made quite substantial progress. The total construction progress is just under 40% now. If you average out through the country, 28. If we then move to the specific projects, and what I did for the committee, and I'm not going to deal with each of them, for both Windows 1 and Windows 2, we gave a list of the project's names, where they are, the type of technology and capacity. What also did this, just to give a full list of each of these projects that's currently under construction, and it's only between the one that's under construction, between the two is just site preparation at the moment. Each project with the starting date, when it's supposed to be commissioned, and what's the price of it, and also what items we monitored at this point. So I think this is quite a substantial list of what is being currently going on in terms of between the one. I have my copies, and I think this might be a bit small for this, but the soft copy is available with the secretary. So that I think can be distributed. So this list is then giving a rundown
just as an example, Chair, the first one there is, let's say, is a PV system, which is outside of Bloemfontein, 20 kilometers outside of Bloemfontein.
Can you expand it even if it cuts other projects? Because it's so difficult to see. Can't expand it anymore.
Now, yeah, I can probably try on this one. I just need to see here. Yeah. I just want to go for higher than 100.
Never mind. Just
carry on. But I said it is available. It is available electronically, so then but so for each technology, the breakdown of the key items, for instance, that the first project, the PV project outside of Bloemfontein, there are 278,000 modules to be installed. Right now, 207,000 modules have been installed. So that's the actual up till 2 weeks ago. And this is lower down Project 043, the Dorper Wind Farm in northern parts of Eastern Cape. There's 40 wind generators to be installed. 11 has already been installed, 34 foundations have been bought and settled. The substation is sort of 80% finished. So we can go through all of them. We monitor them literally on a weekly basis. If we summarize in terms of the megawatts that's been allocated in window 1 and 2, this table is giving that, and then what is the allocation left of the first determination is 1,160 megawatts. That window 3 will take up the majority of that, which will be announced in the near future. I think one of the issues that's also been raised as a question is, what is community issues with respect to these projects? I think it's a learning curve for all of us in the sense that there's a lot of expectations around this, and it's correct, but the expectations, I think, didn't link up all the time with what were the relation agreements said between government and these IPPs. For instance, there's expectation at the moment that the community see dust moving, that these community programs would kick off. But the contract says only upon production the community projects is supposed to start. So things that wasn't well communicated, and also the local municipalities that where these projects have been implemented was sometimes either absent or they wasn't really ready for this sort of activity that's taking place right on their doorstep. I think one of the challenges also the fact that in some cases municipalities did come to the party, but then there was also then other acquisitions being made of preference labour, or preference people getting labour preference or work preference. So we have to deal with that. And then further on, I think also is the fact that when these projects start, and most of them are deep rural areas, the rate that's been paid for worker days is on average much higher than the salary rates that they're receiving in the environment. And a lot of workers then migrated to these projects, and there's also an happening in some of the businesses for these developments there, because they claim like they insect the workers away. So you have to deal with a couple of these issues, and I think it's important that we learn from this, and with Window 2 and with Window 3, we will make sure that in advance there's much more community engagement work done before the dust is moving, as well as with the municipalities. I think the next slide is also dealing with some of the issues. And for instance, the issue about localization is issue that the local people are struggling with. Where they were under pressure, these goods will be manufactured in the environment. It's basically possible to manufacture some of these goods. It's highly technical and very specialized products. So that's some of those community engagement work that we need to pick up much more in terms of this program. There's also an issue about local content. I think it's important that we need to pick up the local content, and I'll also show we'll talk to Ignana. There's also a big misconception around that. As I mentioned, you know, the communities who are under pressure, and everything is going to be made in the backyard.
also issue about what is localization. DCR defines localization or local content as the local content is a product which is the tender price minus the value of the imported content, and then express that in the percentage that's your local content value in. And what we found in the one is that services for consultants and so forth and transportation is also local. And if you work that in specifically during construction phase and civil works, you can actually just in that phase of the whole construction program can take up all your local content percentage points you make up there. So that's why you'll see in between the three and our set manner that percentage have been lifted to make sure that it's really pushed towards the issue where we want the local manufacturing also to be benefited from this program. Yes, the timeline I was referring to in window one, where a certain threshold and what is it, where the target for the different technologies, and it seemed in window two it was lifted, and in window three it was even lifted much higher to move away from that where the implement is then hide behind just doing the construction, basic construction work, and reach their local content percentage. So now they even move into local manufacturing, and that's why a lot of local manufacturing that currently have started up in PV and even in the wind generation, different components are locally manufactured.
To the good, as we move along, that honourable members, that be done with some motivation as how the thresholds are being increased. The extent to which even the, what I say, readiness and responsiveness of the industry itself, you know, is emerging, you know. Okay, carry on. But if that could be noted.
And thanks, yeah. I think with window one, the idea was rather get the renewable energy program off the ground. You didn't want to chase away your investors because locally we were very slim and very thin in terms of these technologies. So you want to attract international investors. And that has been done. But now we move it towards a point where you can't hide behind those other percentages. You need to do local manufacturing. And as a matter of fact, we're very proud. There's a lot of local manufacturing currently going on. In Cape Town, there's some blades manufactured. In Eastern Cape, they're manufacturing now. Some of the towers are now being manufactured in Eastern Cape, which is never been thought of in a year ago. By the way, I just saw this morning there's a big boat in the harbour offloading some of the blades for up the West Coast wind project. So with this increased percentage targets, I think that they know what we have to be purchasing local manufactured products. I think that's good. There was also a question about environmental impact. Just to mention that for us, the environmental impact is only part of the pre-application approval that need to be obtained by the developers. We're not involved in it. We just need to have, they need to go through a legally process, and in the application need to be shown what has the outcome of that been. And if it's just negative, they can't, but if it's positive, then they allow to do it. So it's not for us to we're not involved in that process. We are involved in talking to the respective line function departments in terms of also giving them feedback how to streamline, how to improve the process, and that has been approved now lately, because it's something new for the various department provincial governments, but that has been approved quite substantially, and we're very glad to say that we do it, the process much, much quicker. It's still a very expensive process because of the legal complexity of it, but at least there's much more understanding and knowledge within the local consultants and developers around the process. There's also a question around ESCOM and its ability in terms of the network constraints. I can mention that none of the successful bidders as part of the process before they announced ESCOM is part and parcel of that process. Been known, then it's confirmed if those respective successful bidders, there will be network constraints if they hook onto the network and different voltage capacity, and ESCOM then had a certain time to give feedback. So no project is approved if there is not approval from ESCOM side in terms of the network constraints. I must say the majority of the substations are built and financed by the developers under ESCOM standards, and some of this ESCOM substation that's upgraded to also take to ensure the hookup from these IPPs
comes to National Grid. The question was also asked, what areas can we improve with the follow-up windows? I think what's important is that, for instance, the one I'm just going to mention a couple, that the way we improved our monitoring. I didn't make mention of the fact that, you know, we lift the target for localization. A second one that I want to mention is the economic development activity linked to this development was previously being part and parcel of the implementation agreement with contract. Now that have changed and have become part of a agreement of the financial closure. Because of the fact that we found that when you go into an agreement before they start, sometimes it's clashes of different communities or different developers talking the same community. Afterwards, when they give the target, but you link them to specific projects after agreement with separate contract, which is much better. And then also we mentioned the fact that we learned a lot of lessons how to deal with the community, how to make sure they be being informed well in advance before the first contract arrive on site. And also what we also found is that with the knowledge gained in how to operate as an IDP as an Africa, your risk is lower of developers, and also it's much easier to then apply. And that has a positive effect on the prices, the bid prices. And I believe that even in the third window, we'll see quite a decrease in the bid prices in terms of these different technologies because of this more stability and more trusting in the process. Just also we asked you to give physical evidence. Here's some photos, real photos. In Africa, it's not previously when we talked about renewable energy, we normally used foreign photos. These are real photos. At the top left is a wind farm out of Port Elizabeth, Metro Wind. Right inside is Toast River, a PV farm, and that's the N1, so it's not too far away. Left and bottom here is a substation in Mobino, and right is a project that are. The same with these, is all the bottom left that wind farm there is in Mobino, northeast of Eastern Cape. The top PV farm there is outside of Bloemfontein, the Titsi. Right in top is a solar capital in Maserati. Bottom is an aerial photo of also I forgot the name now of that development outside of the R. And this one is called built outside of Kimberley. It's a huge PV farm. This is an aerial photo. There's over a million of these big solar panels being installed already. Just give you an indication, you see there's still a lot to come in. So the development is dramatic. I hope I gave in a short period an overview of the program. I see there's much more text in the slides for the committees presented at the later stage. Thank you.
Hi, Daniel Vitkos. I hope you'll recommend also which of these should you visit? Should you be interested to visit some of them? Because we are just on the verge of at least picking out some. In fact, honorable members, maybe we could even split, because they are scattered all over the shore, maybe to look the ones that are nearest to you. Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, we've been monitoring this like a hawk eye, and there it is now. The first one to commission was done when? First of November. Outside Kimberley. Okay. Okay. You know, we need to keep those things inside. But can you work that outside on November? But for now, it would be nice just in principle to think positively on that. Okay.
So next will be the presentation by the acting CFO. Because most of the questions also comes from that side. Dustin?
Thank you, Mr. Vinny. Thanks once again, Chair. Chair, we received a few questions under Section A.
Move as fast as you can. You know. We
thank
need
you,
to have
Chair.
Time for questions and answers.
In terms of Section A, there's a few questions. I will answer questions 1 to 4 as they relate directly to finance. Question 5 has been answered by Dr. Barnard, and then Mr. Mgwili will answer question six. In terms of the appropriation adjusted down from 6.5 billion to 6.503 billion, I indicated in the previous presentation that there was a reduction in the budget of 95 million, and the reason for that 95 million is a rollover was granted by National Treasury for the 28 million unspent for non-grid in for the last financial year, so that is added to our budget. So 28 million was added to the budget as a budget increase, and then as a budget decrease, as a result of the adjusted E&E process, the department's budget was decreased by 123 million. And it is broken down as follows, 5 million in terms of compensation of employees, where there was an underspending, and National Treasury had taken that as a savings. And then the second amount was 118 million. And that had to do with the EEDSM program in terms of the solar water heater geysers. I mentioned in the earlier presentation that there was an amount not transferred to ESCOM due to the fact that the contract had not been finalized. And because that amount had remained in our books for 6 months, Treasury forced the savings of 118 million on us. That represents 9.3% of the allocated funding for that program. We did write to National Treasury requesting them to reconsider that amount that they had taken away, but they indicated that they had other critical priorities and they were not willing to negotiate on that amount that they had deducted. So that is coming, the 118 million comes from the solar water heater geyser program as a result of the delayed contract being signed with ESCOM. Then, Chair, there's a number of questions. Okay, this question two speaks to NECA has been given more money for the R&D upgrades according to Minister Godin, and we've got to provide reasons for this. With regard to that, NECA did make in its adjusted E&E and its MTF process, it did make a motivation for 119 million over the MTF period. And that was granted to them in one amount, and that is for the critical infrastructure in investment to be utilized for upgrading and replacement of Pelindaba site infrastructure, strengthening the Pelindaba site security infrastructure, because it's a huge risk, security risk in terms of the fencing and the area around it, as well as the replacing and the upgrading of the Safari 1 facilities for processing enriched and depleted uranium as part of the reactor's overall aging management program. The third set of questions in Section A, that's question 3 and question 4, speaks to a number of environments, and in that question, Chair, it's broken down into the different programs or sub-programs. I just want to present an overall response to that because all of that has one response. The department, being a fairly new department, 3 years, had an interim structure which has now migrated to an approved structure. The first task was to ensure that the organizational structure was aligned to the program structure. And it took the first few years for us to get that right. It was a bed bug because we were always trying to align the organizational structure to the program structure. So now that that has finally been achieved, the program structure had to be aligned to the budget structure. So in aligning the program structure to the budget structure, after the matching and placing exercise, we had to then shift the budgets between these various programs. In total, net result is zero because we had to shift between the different programs within the department to ensure that the organizational structure speaks to the program structure, which then speaks to the budget structure. In addition to that, Chair, we also had to move the budget for to centralize. We had to centralize the training budget. And that came as a result of the directive that was issued to us by the DPSA requesting for us to pay the mandatory 1% of the compensation of employees' budget. It was sitting in various programs. In addition to that, we have streamlined the training budget and centralized it as it is coordinated by the Work Skills Plan Committee. So the combination of the centralization of the training budget and the alignment of the organizational structure to the program structure has given rise to the questions asked in 3 and 4 with regard to the movement of funds between those programs and, sorry, the sub-programs within those programs. Okay, that will take us to question 5, which I think has been answered by Dr. Barnett, and unless there's any other response to that.
Can you move on what doesn't appear to have done?
Okay, in question 6, Mr. McGuinness will answer regarding the vacancy amount.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question relating to the vacancies is as follows. The question was that of the 5 million spent due to vacancies, 2.2 million of the largest amount is in administration. Can the DOE explain why the focus is in an area that is almost 50% of the total staff complement? In response, Chairperson, I would like to indicate that the administration program houses the ministry, that is, the Office of the Minister and the Deputy Minister, the DG's office, the CFO's branch, corporate services, and the COO's branch. When the department was formally established in 2010, the DOE, that is the Department of Energy, did not have its standalone support services function because during the transitional phase, there was a decision to say that the support services will have to be one for the transitional phase so that the support services components of the department could render, you know, a shared service to both departments, that is that of mineral resources and that of the Department of Energy. This arrangement then implied that with the establishment of the Department of Energy as a standalone department from the 1st of April, a dedicated focus had to be given to the establishment of the support services components, you know, of the Department of Energy that were, you know, are currently housed in the administration component of the department. It should also be mentioned that most of the functions carried out within the administration program, Chairperson, are prescribed, and DOE, for it to meet those compliance requirements with the relevant prescripts, we had to, you know, create posts and functions to be executed within the administration component of department. Hence, you know, the impression was given that there was a lot of focus given to the administration program of the Department of Energy. But Chairperson, going forward, like we have indicated, the positions that have currently been prioritized are those within line function components in the area of nuclear, in the area of Dr. Barnabadi's, you know, energy program and products, as well as Mr. Maduela's branch, that is, petroleum policy, petroleum and petroleum regulation branch. Third question, the other question that was asked related to, what we are doing to address the number of persons with disabilities within the department. I must indicate, Chairperson, that during the 2011-12 financial year, we did identify a need to start now exposing persons with disabilities in the line function components of the department, and we employed two interns, and those two interns are currently employed on a permanent basis in the department. And during the 2013-14 financial year, we've also employed two interns in the line function components. We have also come up with a leadership program, as I have indicated, through funding that was sourced from CIETA to train the persons with disabilities who are currently placed in the line function components of the department. Overall, if we count the 7 that we had in the department and the 5 that are currently on our internship and the leadership program, the total of persons with disabilities within the department will be 2.1%. But Chair, we really would like to increase that really going forward. So those are the plans that we have. And during our recruitment processes, we make sure that we target those persons with disabilities for placement on the establishment of the department. We do give preference to bringing them on board.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Okay.
we've done our best to push out things. Now it's time for members. I think just a few things from my side before I hand over to members. It would be helpful to take you from Mr. McCovell, what you have done, to just to make a few minutes overview of the sector, not necessarily the finance people, but clean energy, nuclear energy, you know, what's happening locally within the country, the continent, and internationally, because it would be helpful to refresh members, Maurice, just on what is happening in each sector, generally, very generally, just the status quo. And also, I would like one of the members to observe from what I got from the researcher that there have been a couple of repeats between quarter one and quarter two. Development of two indicators, electricity supply, security, research agenda on expansion of gas infrastructure, electricity sector, transmission, EFP and MPZ, review study, the legislation in nuclear energy, energy conservation scheme, the power lines and substations. At least there's an improvement on PEE and SMME spent, that I must comment. But with the others, they are repeats. But not, I guess we don't handle them now. But we get an explanation with comments from internal audit. With comments from internal audit, why are the repeats from one quarter to another? I think, honourable members, that's where the concern is going to be. Once we start get a repeat of missing the targets from one quarter to another, it's one thing to miss a target in one quarter, but it's another thing now to miss it in the second quarter and third quarter. There could be reasons like that waste disposal, radioactive waste disposal institute that would understand, even if it comes again. I'm not talking about such an academic thing, but others in terms of performance, I'm sorry, would have to be, you know, quite firm about that. For all my sins of having practice so far, I'll keep quiet now and hand over to members. Honourable Smiley.
Thank you, Chair. I'll stop with your last comment. You said there was improvement in the BEE, but if I look at the vote 29, financial summary, and when I do look at the value of expenditure on BEE empowerment and small, medium, and micro enterprises, where we've got R1 billion, it says achieved zero. I'm just making that assumption.
Which page?
It's page 267 on the financial, right at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It says achieved in the first 6 months of 2013-2014 for the April to September. I mean, this, the figure that reflects there is zero. So I was just wanted to make that comment because I wasn't reading maybe the same document that you were reading. Okay.
But I don't defend that, sir. From what I got from the researcher.
Okay, no, thank you, sir. Now, maybe that will be a good carry. You know, I just need to understand that that figure there.
Sure.
It's misleading. Chairperson, I've got a whole lot of questions, and it's a pity that we might not have time, but I'm sure that if we don't get through it, you can submit questions through your office to the department, and I would get answered. But a lot of mention was made about the slow rollout or delays of various programs or contracts. And it gets, the answer that I'm getting is that it's always been done between the first or second quarter of each of that financial year. But I'm trying to understand, aren't we doing some of the planning phases the previous last quarter, say in the third quarter or the fourth quarter of the previous financial year? Because surely you would know that some of these things, so that your administrative work can be done completely, so that you actually, by once the budget is being approved, that it's only merely a supply chain process or a tender process that actually then kicks off, so that some of the hard work is actually being done before. I just would like to understand that in a nutshell. Chairperson, if there was mention made about the low contest about the window periods 1 and 2, and the threshold targets that was set, the 25 and then that on to 45. I'm actually wondering if the department maybe at the next time can actually say what were the actuals. Because there's one thing to say that the target should be to be 25 of local content, but it would be nice to see if the service provider actually exceeds those targets or what the actual rollout is, and that will give us a better understanding of what we want to achieve. And I do want to congratulate the department on that essay. On the basic fuel price and the revisiting of the BFP, although that there is mention made that we shouldn't have any real expectations about revisiting the taxation, but I'm wondering if the department is looking at where there is double taxation on certain of those BFP components, if that is something that the department is looking at that will maybe give a relief to the consumer. I'm just actually looking, are those the components that we are looking at where we are already taxing individuals on the other side? I do want to congratulate or I hope that the 100 million rand that was offered by BP, that is being given towards skills or improving the skills in the sector. But when we went through the budget, we made reference to the 5 million rand, or is it 5.1 million rand, or 5 yes, million, or your 8% towards consultants. And mention was made that a lot of those consultants went towards the sector of the retailers or the fuel industry. A lot of the bulk of that actually went towards that. And what are the plans by the department to make sure that we move away from that and taking up incentive by the offered by the industry to skill our local people? Is that 100 million rand being looked at especially towards that scarce skill in order for you to be able to do in-house products going forward? We were talking about terminals and I'm trying to understand under whose management, if the Transnet pipeline will be completed, under whose management will that go to? Will that be under the SFF? Or will it be under Transnet, or will it be under the department? Because there's still a bit of a grey area. Who's actually going to manage that? And I'm just trying to understand where those competencies are going to lie eventually. The policy in the planning budget, I've noted that it is actually halved from 8.5 million to 3.8 million rand. And I'm trying to understand what is actually going to affect in that department, the cut. Are we going to see less oversight by that department, overseeing the risk? It indicated that it's been halved on that. I just would like to see what the actual rollout was. The vetting cases. Your KPI said 60 vetting cases and 15 has been done. I'm trying to note, what is the 60? Is it 60 of what? Is it how many vetting cases should there be done? Yeah, what is the percentage, what should be going, and the 60 is just the target, but if the 60, what it does completed, then it's the full complement of what the department has said for itself. Your expenses on the double subsistence and your consultants and as the paragraph, if we would come back in 2 months, if we come back in towards the end of the quarter, will I still see more or less the same percentage out there, or will there be a reduction towards some of those costs, saying that some of the bulk has been done now and then there's nothing towards there? I'm just would like to see how does your graph looks towards the...
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I also have a number of questions and we're clearly not going to have enough time, but Let me put some of them through. Okay, just on the INET program, I mean, I have been in discussions with Dr. Barna about the new electrification program and addressing some of the issues, but I just need a complete explanation as to how we will be addressing some of these kinds of issues, because the area that I was dealing with last year, I mean, the big problem seemed to be coming from the concessionaire is, of course, Eskom declaring this an area that they will get electricity in the next 5 years. Therefore, a concessionaire can't move in there, yet Eskom doesn't then electrify that area in 5 years, and we still sit with the backlogs that we sit with. So how is that going to particularly be addressed? Have you got the power now to declare an area open to a concessionaire besides overriding the kind of municipality directive? Is that the power that you have in that regard? And I ask this as well because the real issue also is around substations. I mean, I think that Eskom isn't, I mean, often what they say is we're going to build a substation in an area in order to electrify it, but then that doesn't happen. So I know that that's been the case in the Willamore substation, which they said they were going to build, but it doesn't seem to be on any of the plans at the moment. So I'm just interested as to how we're going to address those issues. And just on the planning side, yeah, I mean, I've looked at the... You know, we seem to be falling behind on a number of documents. I know that you have made some progress, particularly the IEP, which I did participate in last Friday. And what was clear, though, that came out of there and made the point is this issue around an externality study. But it's not on any of your program objectives. It hasn't been for the last 5 years. And I've brought this up a number of times. And the response has always been the same, and the response was what came from Andy again on Friday was, well, you know, we don't know how to do this. The issue is, are you going to be looking at doing a proper externalities of energy study? Are you going to make this one of the objectives? Because it really is mere glaring oversight. And if we're going to have a proper energy debate in South Africa, that really needs to be done. So I'm just interested if you're going to include that in there. And then obviously, of course, we also need a distribution plan. I mean, I'm just, you know, this issue keeps coming up all over the place. And it's clear that Adam is too small to address this particular issue. I mean, 300 million is not going to address the backlog that we face. So what is the process that the department is going to follow in terms of coming up with an holistic plan that can look at a distribution sector in South Africa? This has to be tackled. And maybe it's even bigger than the department. Maybe it needs something else. But what are we going to do besides kind of band-aid of Adam? Are you looking at planning for this? And then just you mentioned the price part as well that will come out at the same time as the IRP. I mean, I would argue that we would probably need to publish the price part concurrently with the IRP upset, but then open it all up to public consultation. Because I think the public needs to know what the implications are of the kind of proposed IRP when it is finally updated in terms of the pricing. And I think on that issue, though, what was still not clear, and even in the IP presentations and the one that OMPI did on the IRP update, is exactly what process will be followed with regards to the updating of the IRP, along with timelines, along with the public's ability to actually comment on it, things like that. If we can get a proper briefing to this committee on precisely how that process is going to roll out, because it's very confusing running concurrently with the IEP. We're not quite sure what is what. And if we can get a proper briefing on how this will all transpire, I think it would be very helpful. Then just on the solar water heaters, I mean, I hear about the standard offer, and I think that that's good, and you're saying that you're having problems in working out how you're going to recover that money on a kind of monthly basis in terms of installments. I'm just wondering whether you looked at this on a kind of municipal level, because, I mean, I know the city of Cape Town is in the process now of setting up a fund which will essentially pay for the upfront cost of solar water heaters and then use their municipal billing system to recover that money each month. Is this something that the department's looking at? Because it seems to make the most sense to work on kind of municipal level. It's the kind of account that people receive every month anyway. Have you been in consultation with municipalities about running such a system, or how do you envisage actually doing this particular process? Because I do think covering upfront capital cost is the important thing here, and getting people to pay a monthly installment, I think, is a much better way to get this rolled out. And we have to think out of the box on this one, because we're not meeting the target there. Then just on the Nuclear Energy Act and the WAVE Act that you mentioned in the document here, I mean, I'm not too aware of what's all in this particular act, and I see that you've said that you've done stakeholder consultation. Which stakeholder consultation has there been? Has it been broad stakeholder consultation with the public at large, or has it just been with certain entities that are affected by this? I just want to find out a bit more about this particular Amendment Act and what implications are and what the processes are there. And then just lastly, with regards to the paraffin price. Now, I heard you say that this could affect the lives of the poor quite dramatically in terms of particularly if you reduce the price by 50 cents. My issue with the paraffin sector is that I don't think that we've holistically dealt with this issue from a kind of household energy strategy point of view. We need to accept the fact that if we are going to be encouraging more paraffin use in South Africa, which essentially a price reduction would be doing, and that also comes with costs to our economy and, in fact, also to the lives of the poor in South Africa too. I mean, it's estimated, I think, the externality cost of paraffin use is about 14 billion rand in South Africa. Now, that's not to say we shouldn't be using paraffin, but what I would like to see is a focus on how we clean up the value chain of paraffin. How do we make it safer? How do we enforce those standards? So it's not just about reducing the price of paraffin. To me, what is the most important priority right now is how do we force companies and force those that sell paraffin to in fact do it in a safe way. And that's where the focus should be, not just on simply reducing the price of paraffin. And so I'd be interested to hear your comments on that, whether in fact you've done any work on how that value chain can be cleaned up. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mamatabela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to congratulate the department to take the lead of going to help other departments of spending money, doing it properly. And the other one which I also want to congratulate the department is the fund that is there for skills. I hope and wish that all departments could follow suit and do the same thing. Then on the money that is taken by the Treasury from the from DOE, if I'm not mistaken, if I have you well, that it's the money from the solar water users. So my question is going to be, are you going to be able to meet the target even if that money has been taken away from you? Then the other one is about the local manufacturers. Have you got manufacturers in doing solar as well as the PV base and the solar water geysers? The other one, which I also wanted to say, was that now seeing that you told us about your traveling expenditure, which means it is DOE that has influenced the treasurer. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I'm sensitive to time, so I will restrain myself and submit mine in writing. But what I wanted to understand, a bit puzzling, I'm going to focus on the quarterly reports, because at times you came for quarterly reports, though they triggered broad issues, but we need to be a bit focused at times. The funding of energy data collection. This has been something ever since I joined this committee that even the former minister raised. I got a bit rather puzzled when there is no funding for it. Okay, can you help on that? Because at the end of the day, IEP, IRP, or just energy planning in general, or in whatever form, you know, is anchored amongst other things on data collection. From a simple, honest question, how can this not be funded? Or am I too simplistic in my question in this?
Another area which links with the utilization of consultants, I suppose having a resource center internal is to help staff to improve and enhance their skills and capacity and expertise. Have you done anything to monitor that? Because my simplistic hypothesis is that the more they use the resources, the more they will improve, and the less in certain aspects, not everywhere, you start seeing less dependency on consultants. I can't remember now, but on this one it was on license compliance. No. It was on that. I really applaud the work that's done by the department of this of rejecting applications with insufficient information on our members. Yes, that one is keen to know, why do you load this upon yourselves? Why shouldn't this be done by NERSOM? It's just a small, naive question. BSP ritual is done in-house, that's very good. But we're not thinking at some stage of some form of public hearings, because the price of petrol becomes a very emotional issue. At times, even more emotional than electricity, because at least with electricity, NERSOM conducted public consultations. Now, with petrol, nothing. You just see it being announced, and that's it. Now, why not thinking of some creative form of public hearings on that? Another area which is going to come on a quarterly basis, well and good granted, which is energy management of energy statistics. But the thing is, you haven't brought to us any overall strategy or policy or plan. I don't remember. Do you have anything of that nature? Don't you think it should even be proactive to share with us? Because then you start on a quarterly basis, bring this is what we're doing in this aspect, this is what we're doing in this aspect. Now, you know, you're dealing with people who are disempowered, because all we know is that there's a need for steps and data management on the overall by the Energy Department. I think it rests with them. That's the same as for the two departments of education. They will have to handle the issue of education from that perspective, their competence as big as the lead departments in education. But if you could just comment on that issue, I'll stop there for now. Or just by the way, even when you're responding, the issue of us dealing on IRP, I'll reserve the right to proceed to that one. I want to make a comment, because I think, unfortunately, we were not there last week because we were held up. Unless anyone of you, maybe Mukororo, would be able to highlight to us what happened, how do they propose to proceed with the IRP process? Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. It's quite a list of questions. I don't know whether the Chairperson would like us to respond uprightly, or should we go and prepare written answers and make a presentation like we've done today, because...
I'm wondering on that. Just lose the last 10 minutes and the rest will be in writing.
I'll request Dr. Banner to start giving attention to those questions that relate to his branch, followed by Ms. Chilizi and Justin Daniel, and then I'll deal with the few that I have. Unfortunately, Ms. Makovela had to be excused because of the meeting. But from his side, what I've heard is just it was just a comment to say, it is really abhorrent that the department is now rejecting
those applications that are incomplete, which has really been creating problems for us or challenges. Dr. Barnett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Honourable members, I'll take the questions as it's been posed. Honourable Shmoney, the comment and the question around the planning, the third and fourth quarter, I think it's completely correct. And we have started last year with that process where we assisted the municipalities with that. The challenge, however, is that they didn't want to commit themselves at that point in time before the money is being transferred. That's unfortunately the way they work. But the bigger municipalities now have come to the point where they accept this. At the moment, the DORAs published, and also I must say DORAs also published earlier. Previously it published very late. Now it's published January, end of January, February. That helps the process. It gives them like 4 or 5 months head start. And that's why also now, as you see, the number of connections is increasing from municipalities because of that. Unfortunately, there's a small number of that's doing that. On Eskom side, they have the second cycle. That's why they complete 95% of all their connections within the financial year, because they start they actually start when we allocate the funds for this financial year. They start planning for the next financial year already. There's also some issues that on our side, your third and fourth quarter is your most difficult quarter, because that's where everything is happening. So now you have to do more visits, more monitoring, evaluation, and that you're planning. So it's a hard time for us. We are doing it. We try to push it specifically on the non-grid. That's where we, I think, slipped up, and we are doing it now. Second comment question was on the threshold targets for the 1 and 2. We have it. I will forward it to the secretary in terms of the targeted and the real. We have it in that combination for the different energy areas, so I can make that available.
So just after the follow-up on that, the third window was going to be announced today. It's still going to be announced today, just so that I can...
No, it was said that because the green sparks are not around, we will wait until the green sparks come back. I know Minister Ben Dugol Martins is still in DRC, for example, until Friday. Yeah.
So, my that's a very little chair, and then I will present the picture about INAP, you know, in terms of this whole non-grid dilemma with how could this new strategy assist? That's exactly the purpose. If you're going to look at the neoification of the deflection strategy, it's built on three pillars. The one is that, for the first time, it's accepted that electrification means also non-grid. So that's fundamentally, and that's accepted by everybody in the industry. The second one is that it's built on the fact that a certain amount of funds need to make available. And second, very importantly, it needs to be done in terms of a master plan. So the funds are allocated in terms of a plan. Sure, it might sound a bit strange, but you know, up till now, the country has done brilliant in terms of electrification. Yes, we are still a long way to go, but without a plan. There was no national plan. Because it's so easy. If you have the map in front of you, close your eyes, you put your finger anywhere, and you're going to be right, there's no electricity. But now it's changed. So that's why the plan, and what we're doing now, the plan is in our blueprint where we allocate. And then the allocation is done according to technologies, and it's in agreement with municipalities and ESCOM. So we're moving out of that dilemma that we have been in the last couple of years. The question on Adam, I think it's correct, and Chair, in terms of time, we are having a session later this week on Adam, so I think we will deal with it more broadly, the 1st of November. I just want to make a comment, but I'm not going to want to talk on a paraffin price, but just indicate that the consumption of paraffin has decreased dramatically. I've just quickly looked up the figures here. The last 10, 12 years, and the paraffin are used for cooking, heating, and lighting. And then cooking and heating, it came down the same, and cooking for instance, it's a 60% decrease. So I think we're in the right spot now to start looking at that, because the consumption has decreased dramatically because of access to electricity and gas. Gas has also started to move in. So this with cooking, 60% decrease, I mean, you guys have certainly also the figures, but it's quite dramatic, the decrease has taken place in the last 10 years.
Chair, I think the question that we posed was myself. Thanks. Right. Thanks, Chairperson and honourable members. I think some of the questions which have been highlighted, we will address them through the follow-on presentation that has been proposed. And I think some of the specific issues that I think will be better tabled there will be the issues of the BFP and basically reviewing that process, as well as the issues of the transport pipelines and how that's going to be managed once it's completed, where management of that is actually going to take place. And then with regards to the issue regarding planning in general and the question on the publication of the various documents and other pieces of work that are actually happening in parallel, I think that I will only partially cover now and ask Mtokolisi to assist maybe by speaking to the distribution in, infrastructure plan and how that will be integrated in terms of the IEP itself. On the issue of the externalities, that has come out quite a number of times, and you yourself, Honourable Member Grayling, you've raised it various amounts of times, and I think that perhaps we should actually take upon ourselves the challenge of actually incorporating that into our work program. So I think we have had discussions internally, and we've agreed that this is actually one area that we actually need to focus on. And I think that now we have done some work in the form of an IEP, at least that has also opened up some scope for us to be able to give more focus to this. So I think it was also largely informed by prioritization of some of the areas that we wanted to focus on. So I think that we would have to incorporate into our plans in the next financial year. And I think your other comments with regards to the electricity price path and inclusion of that as part of the IRP, I think that is actually also noted. And I think perhaps also provide us with an opportunity when we do come back for the briefing session to not only provide you with detail in terms of the time frames for the IRP and exactly when the stakeholder consultation will take place.
I said I will reserve the right for how we proceed on that one.
Oh, okay.
Chair of this committee.
Okay, all right.
There must be a clear and a proper way of how we handle the IRP as a whole. We can't handle it on a piecemeal basis.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Chair. Noted. And I think if I could just add that perhaps the interlinkages to the other plans which are also being developed could also assist in that regard. And then there was also a question around the funding of energy data collection. I'm not sure if I heard the question quite clearly, but the challenges that we're having there is more, I suppose, is a general departmental challenge of the funding for compensation of employees, in the sense that we have a structure which has been approved. However, due to limited availability of funds, we're not able to actually...
Does that unit have a strategy on how to go about collecting data, managing it, interacting with the SA, interacting with municipalities, interacting with this and that?
Okay, in terms of the specific consolidator strategy itself, that does not actually exist, but we have actually embarked on the process of getting a service provider. In fact, the tender is actually out. I think it's closing next week or in 2 weeks' time, where we're actually looking for a service provider to actually help us in terms of addressing the gaps, because work has actually been happening, but I suppose piecemeal, so to speak, largely due to the limited sort of staff that are actually available within the department to actually do that. So one of the outputs that we're actually looking at from that process is not to only look at the data required by the energy planning unit, so not only data required for energy modeling or only for the energy statistics which we submit to international organizations, are looking at a strategy which actually looks at the data management within the department as a whole. And in that regard, work had already been implemented within the department in the form of a centralized energy database. So that is actually there. But we acknowledge that there are gaps. And as I indicated, we are looking at a service provider who's going to help us with coming up with a full data management framework for the entire at least for all the 9 functions within the department, specifically for the management of energy data. Because I think it's broader than just the department, in the sense that we also need to start integrating data collected by other organizations, such as NADIA or Energy Research Institute. The CSIR is also doing pockets of energy, work in the energy-related field. ERC does also extensive work in the energy space. It's not just about numbers which translate into energy certificates, but it's a body of knowledge. We should actually have information about the entire energy sector. So we're looking at a strategy which incorporates all of that. Well, I suppose we won't call it a strategy, so to speak, but it's more of a data management framework, but not only looking at the department's need. So with that, Tebetin, I think I've addressed all the issues. If you can then, Mutokozi, if you could talk to the question relating to the DIP. Thanks.
2 minutes, Mutokozi. Running over time.
Okay, thanks. Okay, I would say by and large, the issue, Dr. Bernard basically tried to address the issue of electrification, which basically is interlinked to the distribution networks, because basically that's where Mr. Dr. Barnard is basically working on the ground, so with the project. So it's a matter of basically collaborating what we're thinking with basically what he has experienced on the ground. Obviously, probably we need to sit down and sort of draw this roadmap or strategy that you referred to, so that we can have a nice coordinated body of work that probably we can share with the committee. Because as I said, I'm from the policy side by and large, so basically it's Dr. Barnard who is basically on the ground. He knows most of the issues better than I do. One point probably that I would like to add with the issue of externalities that the Honourable Member has raised. The Department of Environmental Affairs has done some work with regards to externalities, and I think probably it's something that will have to be coordinated between health and the Department of Environmental Affairs into the IEP, because basically as the Department of Energy, we do not have the expertise to do externalities. You know, externalities obviously is a result of the product, of the produce that comes out of energy, but basically the expertise lies with Department of Environmental Affairs and Health, because they've got the specific numbers of all these tuberculosis and et cetera, and since the Department of Environmental Affairs has identified pockets of areas within the country that are classified as priority where things like pollution do okay the most. So probably something that Ms. Ramosis will have to look at in terms of how she coordinates with those other departments to try and see whether how do we properly input the matter of penalties into the IEP.
Thanks, Mr. Bofu. There was one question relating to 60 vetting investigations conducted as the MIS, which is the Minimum Information Security Standard. The vetting process is actually meant to assess whether people can be given, a particular category of clearance. It can either be top secret clearance or, confidential and so on. But now this process we do in partnership with the National Intelligence Agency. But now the 60% that the 60 that we've given, as an annual target is the bare minimum, but on a continuous basis, as and when the security clearances for employees within the structure of the department expires, we take them through, a re-vetting process. Now we are saying, as a bare minimum, at least we must do 60. And then on a quarterly basis, we are saying we have to deliver 15, clearance certificates. So the 60 is the bare minimum that we've set, as an annual target for ourselves. And we are now really managing it because our internal employees have also been trained and we do have a system to check your credentials. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Mbuna. I think anything else one of the members just leave it to respond in writing. Safe to say that it's good that internal target is here, but I'll be guided by department because I would like to cut into a space, but we'd like to see also the performance and activities of internal court getting more and more high profile. I don't know how you feel, Comrade, Honourable Members, because if you look at Auditor General's report, the issue of supply chain management has still been a concern, so we'd like to see what is internal audit doing to monitor that. quarterly understanding is another area. We'd like to hear what internal audit is doing around those things. It would be very, very helpful. And another area is that we would like to see whether the department is doing an attempt to be operationally efficient. Do reach the same target with less funds. Now, I don't want to hear from you, gentlemen. I want to hear from Uma Mchwala and her team. Just carefully, don't lose your job, Ndanzekai. But you'll have to be coming out very blunt and open on that, without fear or favor, nothing antagonistic, but just to try and make sure that we do the right thing at the right time. Can you be helpful when you come again and just share with us whether the CEO forum is beginning to emerge and get active? Not in detail, just to see if it will have impact as well, because we'll be keen on that. Otherwise, other members, let's meet on Friday to get an update on Adam. As you can see, anything that comes close to it, we always get very, very sensitive to it. And please come prepared. And on that note, thanks very much. The meeting's been adjourned.